Welcome to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, and it's Mr. Anderson Part D, you know, out in Tonopah in the desert in the middle of the whatever. But it's Sunday, August 29th, 2021, and last night, you know, we did a show and we got some sad news. You know, L. Neal Smith had passed away, a good friend. Mike Duggar, a good friend of his and ours and so on. We've known each other for a long time and, as activists. And he put a story up, and we put some links to his books and different things, and it took off. I mean, that was popular. I guess this is the first announcement of it. But he had a lot of friends and supporters and fans, and he definitely predicted all this stuff that's going on. And what, you know, Bob and I, we knew we were going to do a part D, because there's a lot to talk about in the news and everything. And I just want to say this up front. We're in the shit now.
We are in the shit.
You know, this has been, I don't know what someone that doesn't have the institutional knowledge or the activist knowledge or been there knowledge of having participated with these very people that we compete with in the 90s now, or, you know, running the planet, or think they are. And you know these people, you know, I mean, you know them. And they come in and out, and they got, you know, the associates they have and the things that they do, and now they're in, you know, shiny badge positions of, you know, do stuff. And you're going, damn, you gave that person a shiny badge, and, you know, here it comes. And they, you know, absolute power corrupts absolutely, and, man, they absolutely want to have it. So there's a lot of things that we can predict, and a lot of people just, how did you know? And, of course, our comment is, how did you not know? But what were you paying attention to? Well, what we're going to do now is we'll go over a little bit of the news. There's different things. We have, another hurricane on the 16th anniversary of Katrina and what's going on there. You have the fall.
Storm of the century.
Yeah, you know, there's always the next storm of the century. And then you have the, one war winding down, which means what?
New war winding up.
Yeah, new war winding up. I mean, I've been through this. So you always got to have three. You know, it was like, Iran, it's like Iraq, Afghanistan, and Iran or North Korea, depend. And then when you start, Iraq kind of goes away. North Korea, Trump's being buds, we're going to build condos on your beach kind of thing. Then you have, China, we'll just kind of, we'll all, whatever, we're not getting all antsy and going to war, and they can't have that. There's got to be some war somewhere.
That should be a pool. Where will it be? Would it be Iran? Could it be Brazil, since he's telling everyone to buy rifles? Mm-hmm. Or could it be here against our own people?
Yeah, but you have to define it.
How
would you define it? What does that mean? First blood spilled of whatever, and then how do you define that? They got in the United Kingdom story that Bob found was they got United Kingdom ex-military. What was that about?
Oh, yeah. There's supposedly some, bunch of ex-military guys that it was like a couple hundred of them that they're plotting and conspiring that they're going to attack vaccine centers. And of course, the guy who sent me the article, he was like, can you smell the bullshit? Basically, it's like the propaganda's out there. If you're paying attention, there was another one where some general was talking about we got to worry about the radicalization here in this country more than we need to worry about the radicalization over there. They're planting all the seeds.
They're worried that there hasn't been an armed uprising. Yes. We've been through this before. They did this in the mid-90s with the militia stuff, and if there wasn't one, they manufactured one. If they didn't have, they need a Timothy McVeigh, they need a, FBI informant and part of and doing the what. I just saw a story, some FBI agent was trying to profit from the Whitmer thing something.
That whole thing. I mean, much like the January 6th thing and, the FBI is, they're out there just instigating this. Almost any crime you can play your finger that they've had their hands on in the last few years. I mean, the Russian collusion. I mean, it's,
Did you ever read the book?
Bad. FBI is bad. Yeah. They need to go, give me the org chart. Let's see, all these are the new hires right here. Everything above that, gone. I mean, literally, I mean, since J. Edgar Hoover's been there. Yeah, since J. Edgar Hoover was in there and he realized that, like, hey, we can control things by compromising people and keeping book on them. And that's all they've been doing ever since.
You know, that was one thing a lot of the younger people or people that weren't paying attention. During the Clinton administration, the big controversy is the Clinton administration went into the FBI and took all the files on all Congress.
Right.
And they just said, and that was a big deal. Oh, heavens to burger, I can't believe that.
Pelosi's trying to do crap like that right now.
There is...
Under the guise of this January 6th thing.
Right. They want all the social media on everybody. So what happens? Edward Snowden is starting to go, man, you got to be worried about Apple. They're turning over. So then what happens? I just see a thing. Tim Cook, CEO of Apple, is out. He's gone. He's getting his $780 million and dumping stock.
Going to the Caribbean, buying myself an island.
Everybody's getting there. They're going to Fiji. You know, we're in the, you know, South Pacific. Let me know how it works out as I build my blimp, you know. And that's one thing. They're building the airship. At least they're going to get precarious, man.
I'm telling you.
They're on it. I'm telling you. This is going to be their, you know, I don't need a country. I just need an airship. We got plenty. We're on the ocean out there. We'll just go around all the hurricanes. You know, we're good. You know, the hurricane when Katrina hit 16 years ago, man, that's a long time. But I remember it very well. We were on, I was a producer and talk show host working for Air America. I was producer for Charles Goyette, and we had a show then too. And but when Katrina happened, I was producing for Charles, and Kirsten Sinema, you know, which is now U.S. Senator in Arizona, she would be down at the station. You know, I've talked to Kirsten and I know each other well. We understand. We're not meeting. I mean, we don't need to. We get it. You know, and her whole idea is that all the audience, the Air America audience in Phoenix, was to donate to fill a U-Haul that she had to drive to deliver. She goes, well, that's my job. I'm a rep. I'm, you know, this. That's how you think Air America is here for, is promote me doing that.
Damn,
you know?
It. That's my photo op.
Right, exactly. And I'm like, wow, is this, we're working for you? Is this how, you know, well, that's how it works. And you guys know, I'm going, wow.
You didn't get the memo?
I go, well, you need to do that without my help, man. Because what our whole thing was we didn't want to give it to the refugees that were at the stadium here, you know, at the America, I mean, not the, it was the Veterans Coliseum where the Suns used to be and the fairgrounds. And they had all of these people from New Orleans. Of course, vast majority black. You know, they were from the bowl there or whatever. And they shipped them all around everywhere. And they put them in there and it was a big deal. We were all going, well, can they leave? And right now they're doing this voluntary quarantine of you don't have a place to do in Canada and in Australia. And, you know, they're going to be doing it. And I'm going, yeah, you can check in. Can you check out? I just need to know, you know. Well, that was one of the big things. They weren't letting them out. Or they had to come back. If they went out, they had to come back to recharge their Visa cards or whatever the heck they were getting. I mean, it was just money. It was just going everywhere. And we wanted to, the promise that we were doing on the show was we were taking all this food and, you know, so right away. I mean, within days, we're just filling up this U-Haul and we're going to New Orleans, you know, which I did when I went to Camp Casey in Crawford, Texas during, you know, Cindy Sheehan thing. And I go, they needed coverage and help. And I'll just go. You know, I'll report on it. I'll be on the road tomorrow, which is what I did. You know, so we're libertarians. We're like, I don't get a permission slip. We're going to, you know, ask somebody's. And this is how Kirsten thinks. You know, this whole thing is about photo op. Well, we wanted to actually help people, which is when Danny Sessom, that did the crypto show, would take Dash or crypto or money during Hurricane Harvey, or I think it was, or something, went to South Texas. And they went to Ron Paul's, you know, home. They're going in their area. You know, who needs help? They're on the coast there. You know, we're just, bam, boom, go. We just do it. That was not what this is about. It's all about photo op. And at the time in Katrina, there were 600 bass boats. People from
Cajun Navy.
Cajun Navy. They were all from everywhere going, you know how we can get those people off their house? You know how we can rescue them? We're going to take my bass boat. We're going to go get them. FEMA turned them away with M16s.
Yeah. I was going to tell you that last night. It was an interview. I think it was on with Tucker or something, but he had Glenn Beck on. Glenn Beck is somewhere over there in Eurasia, and he wouldn't tell him where because he goes, they've already had a couple of the countries that wanted to take some of these Afghan refugees. Our State Department bullied them till they said no. And so Glenn Beck goes, what? I don't want to tell you what country I'm in because I'm afraid that, you know, he's over there at Christian Ministries. They're trying to get the Christians out of there because they're all going to get beheaded.
Right? Oh, he's over in Afghanistan.
He's over somewhere, not in Afghanistan, okay, but he won't say where because he goes, they've already had a couple of countries that went, yeah, we'll take some of those Christian, you know. And he goes, these are Muslim countries, and they want to take the Christians in. And he goes, our State Department is going, no. So he goes, I can't tell you where I'm at because I don't want to queer the deal with this country that I'm currently in to try to help some of these families get out.
Why?
Because they're evil bastards. That's why.
There is evil some weird bastards. Shit going on.
Absolutely. I mean,
because what we're finding now is that they get a bunch of guys. They're not documented or anything. They send them to Germany or Belgium, wherever they are, and then some other guys get on the plane, and then they come to America. Oh no, we're going to have false flag of real flag of some crap going on.
Yeah, they say, well, you know, there was this, you're already laying the seeds of the propaganda over in Britain from that article we just read about. They get this secret army of guys that are going to attack vax sites. You got this general over here already talking about, oh, I don't know, got to really watch out for the radicalized people here in this country, almost more than the Afghani guy. You know, it's like they're laying the groundwork, people. Well, you know, when the blood spills and the news comes out, don't be fooled by it.
Yeah, you know, all the more reason for we all need more guns. Yeah, I mean,
fooled by it.
John Whitehead from the Rutherford Institute. I've interviewed several times, and what he did is when veterans came back from the Middle East, they were targeting them in their social media for anybody that would say anything about anything. And they go, oh, you know, they get visited by the man, the FBI, and come, and you said bad things about the government, and you've got a gun, and you're not allowed to have a gun, and you're crazy, and you're getting committed. Well, what we found out in Virginia, it was some ridiculous amount. It's like 30,000 people a year are committed to insane asylum evaluation of whatever the hell because they can. And they just, you know, these people are, you know, what representation do they have? Well, the Rutherford Institute took on this case and they finally got them released and so on. It's just, this is Soviet Chinese descent incarceration crap. It has not gonna happen. It's already happened. And they're setting us up for it to happen now. That's what this January 6th crap was all about.
Yep.
You know, and if they, you know, and I saw a meme, you know, Greg said, oh yeah, today he says his last memes. Because Yahoo is jerking around with his email account or some crap.
Something.
You know, I was like, oh.
Please no, Greg.
I know, man. What the hell, you know? So one of the memes was Buffalo Horn Man. And the meme said something like, if they had as many troops go to protect and evacuate the people in Kabul as they did when, you know, Buffalo Man went to, you know, inside the Capitol, it would be fine. You know, it's just a matter of priorities. And it's all BS. There's something else coming. You know, this is so being set up. And the only response is non-compliance. Because I think that if they don't have the, you know, white man militia resistance of shooting at checkpoint, well, when they start checkpoints, you know, crap happens. But, you know, if they don't have the armed insurrection that they can be against, they manufacture one. You know, and I think they're creating whatever it is because people are like, nah, we don't care. You want to be in charge of the marble in D.C.? Who gives a crap? You know, we're done.
Just leave me alone.
So what they don't want is mass noncompliance, because then that puts you on the defensive when you say, I'm just not complying. And they go, well, you have to. No, I'm not doing it. So then they come after you. They have to go offensive. They have to actually, you know, like, you know, physically push, touch, point, force and threat of force. I mean, they got to do coercion. When that happens, then it's a defensive act of the people. And they don't want you to be defensively going after. They want you to be offensive so that they can justify whatever the hell it is they're
going to
do.
So I'm telling you, man, they're going to have to have some Fort Sumter moment with some of the states that are not going to comply this winter. There's going to be some incident that they will justify going, hey, dirty states. We have to go make them do it. And they're going to that's because they cannot, because of the glaring difference is going to be between the, oh, my God, there's people dying in the streets from these dirty unvaxxed people getting everybody sick, and some state that goes, eh. No masks,
South
no
Dakota.
Lockdowns, no care. Nothing. Our economy is good. Everything's wonderful. They can't have that dichotomy out there. They have to be able to crush it.
I think Denmark, done. They said, we're open. We're done. We're not doing anything. We're good.
It's all about the United States. They'll take care of Denmark and Brazil and all that. But they have to get the U.S.
Well, this is when they first did the Constitution. And, you got Patrick Henry and Thomas Paine. All these guys are going, man, I smell a rat. That's where that came from, was when they did the kind of go, I smell a rat. And it was Rhode Island that said, nah, we're not signing up to this. And they beat them into the Union. I mean, they just, boycotted, did everything. You're going to have to, did everything to get Rhode Island to sign off. And I think Delaware and some of the guys said, nah, we're out of here, man. We see what you guys are doing. And everybody, the Constitution. I'm not a big Constitution fan. They set it up to do what they're doing, And Bill of Rights, if you consider that part of the Constitution, okay, that was the answer that the anti-federalists, the libertarians of the day goes, man, we need some thou shalt nots of the government here, man. You're going to do this thing. You better have a whole bunch of stuff there. And they sure as hell aren't allowed to tell what I can and can't say, how I worship, being able to go up against the government and not be, fear of reprisal. To make sure that I got my guns. I mean, then we'll do some of this other stuff. But, man, we definitely got that free speech and gun thing,
Yeah, the whole 10th Amendment, we always kind of ignored over the history. But
reserved I think to the states.
I think it's going to prove to really be important in the next coming year is that some of the states are just not like, no, sorry, we're just not going to play, and you have no right to make us play.
Well, that was something that we learned with the Sheriff Mack thing. See, what made Sheriff Mack so, famous, infamous, whatever, was as sheriff, the BATF was trying to force local sheriffs to do background checks, for gun purchasing and so on. And Mack goes, I don't have the resources for this. I can't be checking. We're freaking Arizona. You know how many people are buying guns and I'm going to be doing? Hell no. I am not doing this. And it was a states' rights thing. It wasn't even the Second Amendment deal. It was just you have a federal government forcing a local sheriff to spend money to do what
mandate.
They want. Unfunded mandate. So, and it went all the way to the Supreme Court. And there was a couple other sheriffs. I think it's named after some Montana sheriff or something. But that was the result of that. Now, of course, they went after him, because, he's like, bite me. And Sheriff Arpaio just couldn't stand it. There was another sheriff in Arizona getting attention more than him. It just literally, it was that.
Oh, no, I know.
It's definitely, that's why him and Trump, got along. Man, they were cut from the same cloth.
Narcissist.
Oh, big time. And I know Joe fairly well. And I, we got a lot of stories. But the, it has been obvious to me that of all the activism that we've done and all of the press for you to react, they want the patriots, the libertarians. Ah, see, he said this, he did this, he did that. And this is why when you have Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Telegram, that when some of the guys go, yeah, they need to die, we got to, drop them in a volcano and do and kind of go get some, and I'm going, shut the fuck up. I go, one, you're not going to be first in line. I guarantee that. You're just yammering,
Troll.
And two, why you want to paint all of us? I go, if I do something, I ain't telling you. I sure as hell ain't telling you, Whatever happens has got to be an individual decision. And, when things happen, it's going to be individuals, and they keep trying to make it a group. They need a group. So what they really have to go after is an ideology, a philosophy, which is why they change the meaning of words all the time. What's a libertarian? Who the hell knows anymore? It's a voluntarist, leave me aloneist, anarchist. What? When I was meeting last week, I think it was Tuesday, Wednesday, with this, or third, whenever, middle of last week in Prescott, with one of these defense preparedness Yavapai County group guys that were on 60 Minutes. They went to me and they said, okay, you know, after we, we had a meeting for a few hours, and they had one question for me. I mean, they, asked a couple of questions or made some comments, what I thought about, whatever. But the one, only real question they had for me, they go, okay, what's an anarchist? Antifa, And I go, no. An anarchist is just no ruler. I go, we just, compared to what? Yeah. Now I want these guys to be in charge. I'm like, or I vote none. Well, hell, that's an easy one for me. I'm a leave me aloneist. I'm a none guy. But you'll probably hear the term voluntarist, anything peaceful and voluntary.
Well, they've spent a better part of a century or so painting anarchy as bomb-throwing Antifa types. And they're not. They call themselves anti-fascist. They are the fascists.
Right.
I mean, it's...
So I go like this. I said, I guarantee, because you mean like these Antifa guys? And I go, I guarantee these Antifa guys, they may want to do away with this government, but they sure as shit want to rule you. You know, don't think they don't got a plan for you. And that is not anarchy, okay? Anarchy is you get to have your own plan. You know, whatever the hell they want, it ain't your plan. It's their plan, So I don't know what the hell you want to call that. It's some collective statist of something. But they definitely got a gun for you. And they want to take away yours. So they understand that. But, a lot of these people, they're conservative, Christian, Republican types that, want to be perceived as...
The small government. They just want to be left alone.
Well, yeah, there is no such thing as small government. And that was one interesting thing. They had listened... What I didn't know until towards the end of the meeting is they had listened to the show that I had done with Dara, that now lives up there, and she's an ex-politician, Ron Paul type that was city council and that kind of stuff that we worked together on things. And she said, yeah, I'm an anarchist now, screw them. Government will not stay small. Their whole thing is to grow and take from you and redistribute to somebody else, And they're listening to her, and this would just be, oh, poo, I don't want to have anything to do with anybody. They just blow it off. Until after 4 years of Trump, until after all this stuff that's going on, until it was neon flashing libertarian. We've been screaming this for decades up here, in northern Arizona and here in Arizona. And all of a sudden, they're kind of like, man, you guys have been right. And then I gave them the newspaper. They read the articles in that newspaper. They're going to be messed up. And then I go, hey, you want to really get messed up? Read the letters of Captain Mark on Pirates Without Borders. And just the name, Pirates Without Borders, man, I bet you that just pisses them off right off the bat, And I'm just going, and there may be some stuff in there they don't agree with, but they'll understand the sentiment and what we're doing and why. And I think after, our experiences, and a lot of times, I mean, of course, they hear about a lot of the stuff that we've done over the years and they've known. And, these guys are politically active, so it's not like they don't know us, But it's just what is acceptable,
Yeah, they at least know we ain't the bad guys.
And that were sincere.
Right.
That was, I got some text messages back. They were very complimentary. They were like, damn, man, that's really on. They aren't going to stop, are they? We talked last night about Eric Hofstadter. He was a really good friend. And he was also a musician. They called it the Cartridge Family Band.
Right.
They did a lot of Second Amendment stuff, and they were always performing. It was a couple of guys, Alan Corwin, he's written a lot of gun books, and so on the law and such like that. And there was a third guy, too. I can't remember his name. But Eric's wife, named Sandy, and she was of Chinese descent. And grew up here in America, but, she was Chinese, and her mother was Chinese. And so they had kind of perspective on that. You hear from her side of the family of, we've seen this before. And she was never really convinced. And I remember it was over a decade ago. It was it was after the Levolution. So it had to be like 10 or something. So it was about 10 years ago. And all of a sudden, she got all supportive. She's like, yeah, we got to get the bug out. They bought like 800 acres in northwestern New Mexico. They built a thing up there, and they had that kind of their bug out deal and so on. And she's all enthusiastic about, the water system and how the power and all this kind of stuff. And she was all into it. She was like, yanking Eric. And I go, what happened? What changed your mind? What you got all scared about? And what happened? She goes, because she did the taxes. She goes, over the last few years, they keep amping it. Anybody, God forbid, you be successful. And she could see how much more money they were taking, how they were justifying it, what they were calling, what you know, death penalty tax, or they're, you know, raising this, and you had to do that, and the different breaks, and whatever it was that she did the tax. She goes, and I realized something. And I go, what? She goes, enough is never enough. She goes, they're not going to stop. They're going to go until we don't have anything. You know,
and then they'll take a little more.
And then they'll a little bit more. So once she realized that it was their intent, there's no fairness. There's no what they can get away with. It's just their intent is everything. You will own nothing and like it, okay? Once you realize that, you go, wow, man, what am I up against? And how do you fight it? So that's what I think people are starting to realize now. What I think the bad guys, they, them, those, they need armed resistance. They need opposite. They need a civil war, a revolution. That they need somebody to blame, to be against. And there was. Did you ever read the book Unintended Consequences?
Yeah.
You know that was. I was. I knew you knew about it. I was wondering if you actually read it. There was Unintended Consequences was a book written right immediately after Waco. I mean, it was like within months. You know, that happened while he was writing the book. There's a guy named John Ross. And he was, I can't remember, he was a financial guy or attorney or something in Missouri, I think it was. And I've had him on the show, you know, and you buy a hard copy of that book, it's like $300 or something, you know.
I think I had yours, and I gave it back to you. Did you get it back?
No, I got in the bus now. I got all wrapped up, and I go, I wonder where that damn thing was. But Gary bought Andrew, you know, up in Prescott, because he was a big fan of this. He paid like $350 for a copy for him, just as a gift, because he, you know, that for his birthday, or I just gave it to him, you know, because Andrew really wanted it. And I have a listener named Hal in Houston that got me the PDF of it, and it was so bad, OCR'd it, you know, that's an optical character recognition, whatever. And it was so bad that he went through the entire book and fixed the whole thing. Sent it to me. There's a Nook version. There's a PDF, what, and we have it on Freedom's Phoenix. And every now and then, you know, I'm kind of surprised it hadn't popped up real popular now. I need to put that back up again, you know, because all of a sudden, you know, boom, it, you know, shoots to the top of somebody's, you know, found
right under,
it.
Right under our good feeling post for today.
Yeah. You know, that was one thing. We were going over the news last night and today, and we were, oh, my God. And Bob, you know, reminded me what I put up all the time.
Yeah. Oh, you want me to? Yeah. They need to go to the site and see. Right. No, it's the, you know, the pole dancing site, you know, or the thing you put up. Every now and then the news gets so depressing, you just go, oh, I got to get a break, man.
It's usually on the weekends, and it was it's a competition. You know, it's like a gymnast, or, it's like Olympic pole dancing or something. And she's beautiful and talented, and it was some fitness competition or whatever, and it was
amazing.
I had no idea you could do this on a freaking pole dance. You know, I mean, of course she's, you know, wearing a bathing suit or whatever, but, you know, workout clothes or something. But she kicked butt, and I just always, it's that kind of thing. You just go, man, what talent! That was beautiful. It wasn't that long. It was fun. It was. The news gets so bad, and I'm thinking, I'm going, there's got to be some. One time, I just, you know, I remember how uplifting it was to see that talent, and it was just awesome. So you're going to see that tonight. We're going to put that at the top, because the news is, I mean, first pole dancing, okay? And then Bob goes, well, the women need one.
Yeah, so, you know, we got the little Chippendale thing going on for, you know, for the women.
Yeah, but tell them which one.
Oh, yeah, you get Patrick Swayze and
Chris Farley.
Chris Farley doing his, you know, and that'll have you rolling on the floor. It's awesome.
A Chippendale audition on Saturday Night Live or something. Just, you know,
just good humor. Break it up, because, man, it is dark times.
It is, you know, and that's why I do a lot of.
Got to find a little light.
Well, the light that I try and put up is a lot of tech. You know, there's, you know, that's where, if you go to PiratesWithoutBorders.com, across the top, you know, communication, energy, shelter, all that is all this tech that can empower the individual. I mean, you know, it's tech, you know, techniques of how to build your own house, how to power your own house, how to purify your own water, how to grow your own food, how to take care of your health. I mean, it's, you'll be a pirate. You don't need the grid. You know, you just need, you know, friends, family, neighbors, community, whatever. I mean, but I sure as hell ain't going to vote myself this crap. I mean, you know, no. They got actuators for that. Tesla bot, you know, Tesla's going to make a robot, you know. All right, well, I might need one to feed my chickens, but damn, Terminator's coming. And then there's articles up here about, you know, liquid metal
I saw that one.
I go, you get Terminators. Yeah, I mean,
yeah. Yeah, you're going to build this stuff? That's how you get Terminators.
It's coming. So it's we've been doing this a long time, and you can see trends. You know, I'm 60 now.
Yeah, have you been watching any of the videos coming out of Boston Dynamics lately with the, you know,
that scares the shit
out
of
me. Yeah, their guy doing parkour and like doing backflips and running
up
and down walls and
stuff. You said guy. Thank you. You didn't call me it. You said him, you know. The yeah,
I'm sure him is pissed somebody off. It didn't have robot boobs, so I just assumed it was a guy.
Well, whatever. I mean, it didn't self-identify yet, and you're calling it a him. It hadn't self-identified.
I know.
You got to let the robot self-identify
scumbag.
First.
I'm sorry.
See, you know, they have I went and saw the movie Free Guy with Ryan Reynolds a couple nights ago with my sister up in Prescott. And I go, yeah, that's good. I haven't been to a movie since you and I went.
Yeah.
You know, we went and saw Joker back in October 19.
And we walked out of that theater going like, what did we just see?
We saw Portland.
And then 4 or 5 months later, we're living it. It was like they programmed it. They predicted it. They pushed the narrative.
I remember you and I talking about it. You know, I think this is what they're pushing something.
Yeah.
You know, and then months later, here it come. And I'm going, damn. And it was Robert De Niro. You know, he was pushing that. And Joaquin Phoenix, you know, they're part of whatever.
Yeah, these guys,
they're messed up, especially freaking De Niro, man. He's messed up in the head.
It was like they were sending the coded message out to the Hitherlands.
Yeah,
I'm like,
it's
get
all
ready.
Programming.
It's weird, 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 weird.
You know, I did go see Godzilla versus King Kong.
Oh, I hope they were.
Because my
predicting shit there.
They predicted they wanted money. That's what they're. You know, it was my daughter and her husband and my grandson. It was my son-in-law and my grandson. They wanted to go see it. And they bought Donna and I tickets to go with them because we were back in town, you know, the holidays. And, you know, we got your tickets, Dad. We're just going. Because I was like, I don't want to go. I'm like, well, we went in and they didn't do masks before. So I just went in, had the ticket. You know, or you get the receipt on the printed out on the computer, or I got it from the something. I had it. So I didn't go, you know, wait in line or, you know, get soda. So I just went to the ticket guy, you know, here, and he said, beep. It's over there, and I went. Well, when they start coming in, you know, they're like, oh, they're trying to make us wear masks. And I told them, I'm not wearing a mask going. So fortunately, I didn't have to wear a mask. But, you know, they're trying. So now when we went to the movies to see the Ryan Reynolds movie, which is a good movie, by the way, I thought it was fun. And we had a good time. But the they didn't have the mask stuff or anything, and I think they're going to try and bring it back. You know, they're wanting to get it. And I don't know if the – and this is one thing that you were talking about. You know, all these other countries look at America, and they don't really understand. America, it used to be until the Civil War – you were a Virginian or a Georgian or whatever. You weren't an American. You were the state, United States of America. It was like this European Union kind of thing. Each state was its own government, and it had its own, and the Constitution tried to bring them together. This has all been planned. They have to have you consolidated under one rule, and it keeps every year, they'll, you know, a little bit more of this, a little bit more of that, a little bit more, right up until you get NATO taking over Norfolk Navy Base.
Yep.
That's coming now. And I'm going, we have a story up on Freeman's Phoenix now. Norfolk Navy Base, NATO's base of coming. I'm like, kiss my ass. This is what we have been fighting against all this time. I remember when we had a rifle raffle, and it was called Liberty Rifle Raffle. It was the logo we had, the Statue of Liberty holding an M16 above her head. And then there was the next one. It was called the, the Sniper Raffle.
Right.
You know, and the logo was crosshairs with Bambi wearing a UN helmet. Okay.
Right. And one of the first prize was a sniper rifle.
Really nice one.
And really nice one. Yes, it is.
Yeah, didn't you win that?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, because Bob would buy like $1,000 in tickets.
And the second place was the same caliber, same action, bolt action, but nice wood stock hunting rifle. And the whole idea was
it was the same thing.
It was just to demonstrate that, like, you know, they're calling it, oh, this is, you know, evil black gun, vice the, you know, it's for hunting. They're the exact same gun. And
what was the third gun? I don't even remember.
I think we had an SKS or something like that, or an AK or something. I can't remember.
No, that was probably the assault weapon one that we did, or the battle rifle. You know, it was a, I don't know, it was something like a Mosin Magad or something, yeah, you know, some crap like that.
I didn't win, but so I didn't pay attention.
Yeah, it was the Dragon.
Dragunov?
Yeah, the Dragunov. I think it was. I think that's what
we had.
That
would have been the first prize these days.
No, I can't remember. Anyway, so it was a Savage 308 or something that we did. And it was the tickets that were popular.
Right.
People would pay $5 for the ticket just to have the ticket, you know, because it was cool, you know. And that's how we raised money. The first one that we did, that's how we opened our first headquarters. When I first became county chair, you know, back in, it was the end of 93, going into the 94 election cycle, and we said, all right, I'm going to do this. We're going to do it. You know, so everybody was like, you know, Bob and friend, we're all, woohoo, let's go, we're going to whip ass. Well, we got to raise money. And we raised like $12,000, which is like real money back then. And we opened our first workshop, you know, the first headquarters. And that was with that rifle raffle. And it was called the first one was the Liberty Rifle Raffle. That's what it was. And then we did handgun ones and everything. Everybody loved when we did, you know, it was always some cool crap that we did. One was a, you know, when handguns were like a big deal, and we go, all right, we need to do. So it was a bunch of concealed carry with cool holsters and all that. And we called it a safe shoot because Second Amendment is for everyone up at Ben Avery Shooting Range, which is now Arizona Game and Fish run it, or before it was private, you know, it was a thing and they took it over or whatever. But and they tried to close it and we stopped that and all this kind of, so we've been involved this a long time. But we had a shootout, and the guy that won was this incumbent state legislator. And it was weird. This was that one thing, I can't remember his name, but he was in the Air Force, so he was familiar, and he had his own 45, or he borrowed one or something. And he kicked butt. He won the, you know, so he got like a concealed carry rig with a gun, all kinds of crap. And he's, oh yeah, I haven't shot and blah, blah, blah. Well, a lot of the guys go, he was over at the other range over there all morning shooting. Why would he lie? I mean, these guys just lie automatically. You know, as I'm going, they go, I don't know what the hell he's talking about. I saw him over there practicing all morning.
Politician.
I know. It's just weird, you know.
They can't help themselves. It's part of their DNA.
And then we had, it was a battle rifle thing. It was a safe shoot we had for congressional candidates. And the Democrats, all the women, Democrats running for Congress, because in Arizona, you want to get elected, man, you're going to have to, you know, which is why Gabby Gifford, that got shot in the head, you know, in Tucson that time, she had all, you know, her pictures at her with, you know, shooting with her ARs and all that kind of crap. I'm not going to take your guns and everything. And then, of course, later, oh, well, I was under supervision of the Sheriff's Department to show me, you know, that kind of crap. And they would go out there. And these women, I remember these two Democrat candidates for Congress, I can't remember their names, they were just giddy. They thought it was the most awesome thing ever. Because when you shoot an AR, a .223, it's like a BB gun. They're all this big black detachable magazine, pistol grip, ugly, whatever. It goes pink, pink, pink. You know, they have no idea that it's going to, they think it's going to be like a 12-gauge kick of, you know,
yeah, that
308.
Was like that young lady that came over from Denmark or Norway or whatever it is.
Right.
We had her out here and took her shooting.
Finland.
Yeah, Finland. And she was like, same thing. She had never shot a gun. I mean, after the first trigger pull, she was like, you could just see the smile on her face. This is, you know, carnival time. It's like, you know, going down to the, you know, pink, 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 pink kind of thing.
There was a woman when we had, it was the 12 campaign cycle for the Ron Paul Revolution. I remember we were making signs. She came over after we had a party, we did a sign. She goes, I want to make more signs, because it made her feel so much better. She just wanted to do it because she was from South Korea. And, you know, South Korea is supposed to be a free country, semi. And she goes, no, you do any kind of, it's social credit score time, man. They got you on a list kind of stuff. And she goes, making signs is just so, and then she was, you know, enamored. She was wanting to shoot a gun. And I remember it was summer. It was hot, man. I was just going, I go, I'll take you out, man, if you want to do it. You know, everybody's sending all these guys from Europe and the Arizona Project, where they bring all these, you know, entrepreneurs and stuff and do the, you know, they're like, you know, like exchange students kind of thing. They come out for 3 or 4 months and they go around and tour the Southwest, all that kind of stuff. So they'd always come on, I'd interview them, and then we'd go out. They had to go shooting. That was their big thing. Well, I've done that with a lot of people, you know, like I've never been shooting like people from Chicago. Yeah. Gary Franchi, I remember, you know, from Next News Network, he came out and he was just like, you know, thank you, Leah.
Thank you.
And he'd come out and he'd go shoot, man. He thought that was the greatest thing because they never get exposed to this kind of stuff. Well, I took the South Korean girl out, and here's the question. What do you start off with? Well, you get in the little 22, the 10-22 Remington, and ping, 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 you know, and then you work it up to the 12-gauge, or do you start at the 12-gauge and everything's down from there? I mean, you know, how do you do this? So you want to get them a rifle, a bolt action. You want to do a semi-automatic, you know, battle rifle or something, a detachable magazine. You do a revolver handgun, a semi-automatic handgun, Glock or something like that. And then you like a bunch of, maybe a shotgun, you know, that kind of thing. So we lay it all out, and I go through all the stuff, and, you know, be safe. We had a canopy out in the desert, and we found a place up, you know, Table Mesa Road up there or something, that they're closing off, by the way. You know, anyway. So we get out there, and I said, you know, I tell you what, I'm going to let you, we're going to start with the big one, and then we'll go down from there, just to get it out of your system, right? So hold the 12. I don't want to put them up the shoulder because that would, you know, really do them up. So I kind of, you know, stand there and get her all positioned. Hold the 12-gauge shotgun. I said, you hold it down to your side, and it's going to go boom, and it's going to go back. But hold it firm. You know, it's going to be one shot. She goes, and she goes, okay, boom. And I go, that's the max. Everything is down from that. Okay, so I kind of breaks the ice. Then we'll go, okay, then we did the 22. And I go, pink, pink. And I go, everything in between that, you know. So then you want to get the last one you want to spend the most time on is the AR-15. When they do the AR, they'll do the AK, you know, they'll do, but they get to the AR-15, the U.S. military, and it's a freaking BB gun, and they just light up. And I'm telling you from experience, you know, just not that I've taken advantage of this, by the way, but you take women out and they go to the range and they empower themselves with an AR and they get to shoot it. They're like, man, I want to party. You know, we need to go dancing, man. We need to have sexual relations or something, man. I mean, it's woohoo. They are so empowered by having that experience that it would be a really good date for, you know, young men if you're safe. You don't want to make them feel uncomfortable. You don't want to have other guys around doing all that macho shit or anything. You just want to take some. It's like taking them golfing or something, but with a gun. And you get a young woman that has, or any woman that has not shot before and is terrified, scared of it. You take them out. I remember the reporters from Germany back in the late 90s. Oh, tell them about that when we took them over to your house that time.
They came over and they wanted to, you know, they'd come to Arizona to talk about the militia movement during that.
They were agents for BATF.
That time, yeah. But they were fishing, but they came out to they interview militia stuff, right? So of course, thing they you know, we turned them on to was the colored gentleman who was basically the head of the militia that. Wasn't he the same guy that did the carried the AR during the Obama?
No. I can't remember his name. He was a popular Second Amendment militia guy here in Arizona that happened to be black, so that was, you know, messed up their narrative.
Yeah, because they wanted to come out and find out, you know, the skinhead white person, and here's this, you know, black guy who's head of the militia in Arizona, or at least his little band or whatever.
He was a lobbyist. He was, you know, he'd be down to legislature. He worked for Landis Hayden, which was Arizona State Rifle and Pistol, which was kind of like their local chapter of the NRA or something like that.
So they came out, and then they came out to interview us out at the
well, they came because we were on the okay. I get a call from Sheriff Arpaio. This is like 94, 95, you know, and I get a call from Sheriff Arpaio, and he goes, "Hey, Ernie, you're on top of the list." And I go, "Woohoo! I made it. What list? I don't know what you're talking about." Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center had a list of evil freaking militias in United States America. All right. Well, it was alphabetical. Well, the Arizona had safe. Second Amendment was for everyone because we had done the initiative for concealed carry and we had all these shoots and politicians out and doing, and we had sniper competitions, I remember, you know, that we did, that we judged. And we were out in the open. We were heavily politically involved. Duggar, you know, last night we talked to Gun Owners Liberation Front, Libertarian Second Amendment Caucus, safe. I mean, we're involved. Well, we were the no compromise guys. Yeah. I mean, we were like, you know, so they had... From whatever, we were in Claire Wolfe's book, you know, 101 Things to Do the Revolution. So we had getting a lot of notoriety, and this is before the internet. So God forbid you made it in some list somewhere. Well, the Southern Poverty Law Center came out with a list of militias. Well, who's at the top of that list? Arizona, safe, Ernie, okay? So I knew it. Well, back when they used to care.
Well, remember, we ran radio commercials on the radio show.
Oh, that's
with Rick
right.
Tompkins. We, you know, I remember that was like the first medals I ever cashed in was to fund some of those commercials on that whatever radio show that was, and it was a commercial for militia.
Yeah, Bob, you cashed in like I don't know a couple of gold coins or whatever to be able to pay
fund,
for
yeah,
some
commercials.
Radio commercials. So it's like we weren't secret about it, you know. So we made that list, you know, the Southern Poverty Law Center, and I forgot all about that. We're on the list. Sheriff O'Power goes, "Woohoo! You're on top of the list. Not only are you on the list, Ernie, you're on top of the list." And I'm like, "Woohoo! We made it!" You know, so he just knew. He knew us, and he just did. I don't know why he called it. I mean, we didn't have a bad relationship. I just knew he had Trump syndrome, man. He was an egotist, and he was part of the problem. He was embedded in. He came to Arizona when he retired from the DEA to protect their drug running of whatever. Arpaio was not a good guy, okay? You know, blah, 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 blah. You don't come from where the hell he came from, move to Arizona, become Maricopa County Sheriff without, you knowing somebody. And he worked with Napolitano back and forth on it. It was just ridiculous. So I got a bunch of Arpaio stories. But anyway, we had a cordial relationship because, you know, I didn't go after him personally. I just, you know, philosophical stuff. And so we had a decent relationship since 92 because I was seen as... You know, as much as you can be the leader of the independent, not party or whatever the hell it was, because I had independent status in my election law lawsuits. So what happened, I was on his Rolodex. He would call me like every few weeks, just checking in or whatever during the campaign in 92 when he first won, because this is what they knew. Only 14% of the people at the time were registered independent, but they made up 29% of those that actually voted in the general election. So they were like, they knew better, but they still participated, you know, that kind of thing. So that's, and I was just, because I was, you know, fighting for the rights of individuals regardless of party affiliation. That's what the whole lawsuit thing was about. So that's why Arpaio and all these guys, they buddied up to me as much as they could. And I'd be nice to them and cordial, but I'm like, no, I'm not buying in your credit. Whatever. So that relationship went on for, God, 20 years or something. I mean, how long was he in office? For freaking ever, you know? And from 92 to long time. So he's warning me that I'm on this list. He's warned me a couple of times of different things. He's also kind of threatened me on stuff, too, you know? Especially, it's always Second Amendment crap. You're storing guns in your safe bunker because when they were, register.
Where are you keeping your cannon?
Yeah, right. No, that was a whole nother one. God, man, I got so many Arpaio stories. Anyway, we'll get off track on that. I know you guys want. Say it, Ernie! All right, real quick. California had the SKS. And they call it the SKS Sporter or something like that, because they wanted to ban assault weapons in California. I was a boxer in Feinstein or whatever, did this in California before they became congressmen, and they went to Washington and did the assault weapon ban, all that kind of stuff. So in California, they had done this, but they had the SKS, which was a semi-automatic battle rifle used in Vietnam against the U.S. troops. And I love that. That's one of my favorite guns. That thing always freaking works. You put it in, it goes bang, man. I mean,
pull it out of the mud.
It's good to go. That was my first rifle because it was only, they were like $100, $69 if you bought them five at a time, you know, that kind of thing. So a bunch of us, when they did the Brady Bill, a bunch of us, we didn't have guns, but we got armed up then. We were like, man, we could see where this is going. I was head of SAFE, Second Amendment for Everyone, and didn't own a gun. I remember Mark Fuller gave me a Makarov just because he was embarrassed and I'd always go to these things. I didn't have a gun because my father had, you know, plenty. And whenever I needed something or I go camping or I was worried about, my dad would let me use a gun. So that was my first gun. I'm poor. I mean, guns are expensive, you know. So we got the SKS. In California, they had the SKS was a, you know, it wasn't black. It was Woodstock. It didn't have a detachable magazine. It has stripper clips. It was, you know, it didn't have a pistol grip. It had, you know, so it didn't meet their criteria that they could ban it, but it still shot a 7.62 by 39, which is an AK-47 round. And it did it well, and it kicked ass. And when you had the stripper clips, you can get a bandolier. You could carry like 200 rounds. You know, it was, you can see that was a formidable weapon. So, and then I put a aftermarket folding stock on it. So that was the gun. I have ARs and, you know, AK-40, all that. When I was at home, that before grandkids came, you know, and you can't have stuff laying around, you know, that was the gun that was by my bed. It always worked. It was simple to use, and it was freaking man, you know, I win.
Okay. Good business.
And all I did was put a 20-round magazine on it as opposed to the 10, but you had to load it from the top, a stripper clip like the old M1s kind of thing. So what California did is they said, we're going to allow that. That's okay. But then they go, but we need you to register them. You just got to register. It'd be okay. You register. NRA goes, well, make sure you get your slip and, you know, that kind of stuff. They were part of this thing. It's just, you know, NRA has been scumbags. I just, man, I got nothing good to say about the NRA. So then all of a sudden later, an attorney general made a ruling that, nah, we changed our mind. And thank you for all the list of everybody that's got them. Now you got to turn them in. We'll give you $300 for it, but you got to turn it in. So what we advocated is safe. We go, it's not a problem. We got you covered, man. We're going to do safe storage. You just send it there, and we'll store it for you. All right? Well, us making that, which we never did because nobody took us up on it because, you know, whatever. But we just did that, you know, playing ass, screw you. Well, our Pio freaked, or somebody did, and they had him, you know, you can't call Ernie. So you know you're being taped, you know. And I was at my restaurant, you know, it was like after lunch, you know, or something like that. He calls me at my restaurant and talked to me. Oh, the sheriff wants to talk to you. Oh, well, hell, I'll just get right on, right? All right. You know, I got a bunch of Joe stories. But anyway, so I go, yeah, Sheriff, what do you want? He goes, I hear you got a safe bunker. What? You know, he's like, well, you're doing the gun. I go, oh, okay. Well, that's nothing for you to worry about, Joe. It's not in your jurisdiction. Oh, yeah, I'm a Lord God King Bufu some bitch in charge of Maricopa County. Well, you don't tell me it's not my... I go, no, we're using a storage facility on the Native American reservation east of Scottsdale. So it's not in your jurisdiction, nothing to worry about. Oh, boom, 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 boom. Man, he did not like that one, you know. And so then he had one of his commanders call me later.
Kimo Sabe.
You know, and I'm just like, you know, give it up. There was another one. He had at the millennium, you know, it was party like it's 1999. When it was 2000, we found out that he had got a mobile artillery piece. And it's kind of like a tank. And the only thing that's not a tank is because it doesn't have a turret, but it has a big gun on it, you know. And they were using him and George Segal going around busting, you know, chicken rooster fighters and crap with it. I mean, it's just stupid. So when he got that, a friend of mine, he goes, Arpaio has a tank. And I'm going, what? You know, this is before they started giving everybody tanks, you know. Arpaio was one of the first. He gets some, right? He got some military equipment. And I'm going, no. And he goes, yeah. It's down on Van Buren and Grand over there. It was some, you know, auto paint place that, you know, buddies that they had, and they were painting it, you know, black. And then, oh, it's a DEA, no, it was a DARE, you know, a DARE program.
Keep kids off drugs.
Yeah, whatever. Oh, but no, he wanted to use it.
Run our tank over you.
Oh, he had it, and put a 50 caliber on it, whatever. He's going to, he's going to get some. And he used it on New Year's Eve when it turned 2000. He put it down on Mill Avenue in Tempe by ASU and kind of, I'm going to control it. You ain't doing nothing now, you know, that kind of thing. And that's just the way he is, right? You know, small penis thing. So I'm going, all right. So I call him up and I go, say it ain't so, Joe. What? You don't have mobile artillery piece, do you? Well, what if I do, you know? And I go, look, I tell you, if you let me just come inspect it and that you don't have a firing pin, that it's not freaking sending artillery, you know, then I'll tell everybody and it's all good and, you know, no big deal. But I'm just like, I mean, come on. I mean, seriously, is it that small, you know, kind of thing. So he's getting all pissed off at me. He goes, well, I'll just park it in front of your restaurant and aim it at you. And I go, no problem, bring it on down. I have my paint guy, because we always, you know, doing coupons on the windows. So I go, Bill of Rights, void, we're prohibited by Joe. Not a problem, man. You bring it down. We'll have some fun, you know. Kind of. Then we did, you know, Kristallnacht 2, Joe's Jerry's, you know, and kind of, we just, it's just, he couldn't not do this stuff.
They can't meme. Those kind of people can't meme.
Yeah, we had memes before there were memes. So, and then one time he called, this is early on, this is like in 94 or something, and it was a veiled threat. You know, these guys, this is somebody that operated in Central America, you know, and out of Turkey and DEA. He was a DEA guy. And they just went and told the guys how it was. They couldn't, you know, how the hell deal with us, you know? So he called me one time and he goes, I can't even remember what it was about. He was threatening me about something. And I'm going, you know me, Joe. I mean, I'm good. As long as I go down with an empty magazine, it's okay. You know, everybody goes, oh, yeah? Well, you know, well, as long as that brass cannon you got there. And I go, what makes you think that I got it here? You think I'm just going to have you where you can just come get it? You know, whatever. I was poor, man. I had an SKS and a Makarov. I mean, seriously. So it's just their attitude. And this is how they operate, from intimidation. Force and threat of force. Well, they don't know what to do when you're just, you don't care, you know, they're certainly act that way. So it was, you know, all these, where the hell we got off on that, you know, I don't remember where we started off at, you know. But so we got plenty of, you know, Joe stories. But this was decades of relationship. We had the same relationship with the police, the Phoenix Police Department. You know, we had guys that we called, look, we're going to come here, we're going to do this stuff, we're going to protest that, and, you know, don't make us sue you by somebody being stupid and you're, you know, freaking, you know, 27-year-old Iraq vet that just got back from going to explain it to me kind of thing. Just, you know, don't be stupid. And they were pretty cool about it. You know, they bring out going, yeah, you know, we got some hotheads here, and they had, you know, calmer heads that we dealt with. And as years went on, man, they were like, get us out of here, man. I got to retire. I'm getting my bennies, you know. And all the good guys are gone. This will bring us to Jack McClam. Jack McClam was the original officer friendly. He was a Phoenix policeman that refused to do unconstitutional stuff. And because he refused, they couldn't really fire him for that. So they put him in the minority neighborhoods in South Phoenix without a car in the summer, and you're walking a beat. And if he needed any backup or help, they weren't sending it. They're like, screw you, you're not part of the, you know, the brotherhood. So we're just going to, yeah, you can pay your check as long as you can get your paycheck as long as you live and, you know, walking around in the neighborhood. So he was a nice guy. He goes, not a problem. So he'd go around, talk to the vendors, you know, everything good. You know, he's a beat cop. Everybody loved him. And he got known as Officer Friendly. And that became a thing. But he also had a newsletter called Aid and Abet, Police and Military Against a New World Order. This is like late 80s, early 90s.
Right.
And he also, you may have heard, it was called Operation Vampire Killer 2000. That's right. And I think they did a 2010 after or something. Now, he later moved up to Idaho, and he had an intentional community up there, and then he died. And I have old archives that have of, you know, I did like 4 days on radio out of Scottsdale with him just to get the whole real story in. It was amazing what they did to him. Now, he was the most decorated, most hired, most fired Phoenix police officer, because he refused to give up his database to all these police and military that were receiving his newsletter. And he goes, I'm not giving it to you. Screw you. Because they definitely want to know who these guys were, you know, had this, you know.
It was an incredible document. I mean, he predicted, like, all this.
All this.
You know, all this, you know, and he was basically talking to the, you know, the Oath Keepers, you know, what is kind of morphed into Oath Keepers. Yeah. It was all these guys, hey, you took an oath to the Constitution to protect the people. What are you going to do when they start having you do stuff that's against that? And that was kind of the premise on it. But he talked all about this militant gangs and how they were going to, you know, use them to burn the cities and create hate and disc. I mean, he knew it was coming.
Yeah, you guys need to look up Vampire Killer 2000. He predicted all this.
Yeah.
And how they were going to do it. You know, G. Edward Griffin, you know, he's had, you know, interviewed, you know, defectors from the Soviet Union. This is how they're going to do it. You know, this, a lot of these older guys, they knew this is how they're going to do it. This is how they always did it. This is how they're doing it. Okay. Well, that's one thing that's different is that we have, you know, the internet, which they're trying to control, which is why we go
IPFS
and signs and newspaper and QR codes, IPFS files that they can't take down. See, we know we've been doing this for a long time. They're always trying to, but they're always fighting the last war. You know, they don't get it. So Officer Friendly, Jack McLam, he helped Bo Greitz when he ran for president in 92. He was part of that. And Bo Greitz, his claim to fame was he was a highly decorated colonel. Colonel Bo Greitz in, I think it was U.S. Army, he was Green Beret. And he went back to Vietnam to find the truth about, you know, what happened to these prisoners that, you know, got lost, who's doing the drug running, the CIA and Air America and all this kind of stuff. So he, it was General, I don't know what's his face, you know, some South Vietnamese guy. And he would go and he just, you know, march right in and, you know, going through the jungle and had, you know, went and had meetings and pictures taken and wrote a book. You know, let me tell you what's really going on. Of course, the government don't like that. They don't want to, God forbid he's running for president as the presidential candidate of the Patriot Party. We had, oh man, we can go on and on and on. But the, so Jack McLam, eventually they arrested him. And I know who did it too. The officer that did it. It was, one of friends of Mark's that he was in a foxhole with in you know, Kuwait, and when he got out of the Marines and he came to Arizona Phoenix Police, they go, we need somebody to run. He goes, I'll do it. And now what happened? He just retired as the liaison from the Phoenix Police Department to the Department of Homeland Security Fusion Center. His email was, you know, his name at FBI.gov. And I go, really? He goes, we're just one big happy family, Ernie, you know. Like, oh. But he was the one that arrested Jack McLam at a gun show. He's standing at a table selling his books and so on, wearing his retirement badge. They said he was impersonating an officer just to fuck with him. That's how they roll.
Yep.
So, of course, he gets out of that and so on. But it was just because they can. And you got somebody come out and be like, yeah, I'd be willing to whatever. And that's how you move on up, you know. And he did. So, and now he's doing some contract training of whatever the hell, whatever. But I've been on vacations with him. I mean, you know, I mean, he's a nice guy. But, you know, once you're in, man, you're in. And so Jack McLam was the original Officer Friendly. And he did Vampire Killer 2000. If you look that up and you read that, and the point that he was making, he goes, when they do this, they're going to need the police and the military to be the tip of the spear. He goes, we are going to be the ones that are doing this to the American people. That's what's going to happen. And he goes, I'm not doing it. And if you don't want to do it, don't do it. And here we go, blah, 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 blah. That's what they were freaked out about when Clinton administration. So now let's talk about Biden. So I didn't even think of this.
Rumor on the street.
Yeah, I didn't even think of this. It's just, this is, you know, we're building up all kinds of crap. See, this is, you know, these are stories that are tangential, kind of, you know, oh my God, Ernie went on a tangent again. You know, but this is how we know.
Yeah, it all rolls. I mean, it all comes together. It's like, you know, rumor on the street is, you know, Joe's not going to go all 4 years. He's going to go to the old folks' home. He's going to go pat his dog. He's going to go eat ice cream. He's going to go back into the basement because, you know, he's Joe.
Right. He was never meant to.
Kamala Harris will ascend to the presidency, and her VP, she gets to appoint her VP, or she gets to pick it. I think they got to go through a confirmation.
Yeah, I'm wondering
process.
How that happened. Because I remember you were saying during Nixon, Spiro Agnew got run out from corruption or something, and he had
he resigned.
Joe Ford.
Yeah, he resigned, and Nixon picked Ford. And then when Nixon got busted and he resigned, Ford pardoned him and became the president. And then I think
Or did President Ford, then pardon.
Yeah, yeah. And who did Ford pick for VP?
I don't know. Who cares?
Yeah, yeah.
Now,
I can't remember, but yeah. So when Joe goes off to the ice cream eating in his basement, Carmella will pick Hillary Clinton.
No!
She said so the story was a week or so ago where they were already talking to Hillary. The Canadian prime minister was talking to her, or some ambassador or something like that. What was going over in Afghanistan? Because basically he goes, Carmella and Joe are AOL. I can't get a hold of anybody. So I'll talk to you. It was just, and I was like, ding, ding, ding. The lights going off. People started talking about it.
Because Kamala was definitely a Hillary pick.
Oh, yeah.
Kamala is Hillary. Yes, Hillary, Kamala, Hillary, same thing.
This all
goes
back to Obama. He's still running his little shadow government thing out of the house that he built in Washington, D.C. He said he was going to. I mean, he didn't go off to go build houses like Jimmy Carter or run cattle like Reagan and Bush. I mean, he was put into place instead of Hillary with the promise that Hillary would get to be president when he was done and she could carry on the legacy because he was here to basically destroy the country. And that's where he's been going down this pathway and taking us to the communist
Kamala
plan.
Was always the pick.
Yes.
And
she is hated.
Hated and terrible. I mean, just a bad candidate, bad perp, bad.
She couldn't get out of her first primaries. And then
Biden beat her.
Yeah.
Well, that tells you everything right there. So Biden is there, which is just, he's not, because he was never meant to, whatever, anyway. So they frauded him in. And then Kamala, being VP, comes president, and then it's who's going to be VP under Kamala for a week. I mean, whatever. And if Hillary comes in as VP for that, I would be, are you freaking kidding
me? I'm immediately going to go see if I can take out a life insurance policy for $1 million on Harris. It's like, what are the odds? I mean, there'll be odds in Vegas.
There's going to be some crypto.
How many days would it be, before there's been some untimely accident that happens? And, it's like,
This I didn't even think of that. I'm going, how does Hillary get? And
Trump goes 2024, and we have it's Hillary and Trump.
I know, it'd be
2.0.
Awesome. That'd be awesome. That'd be like
me.
Bob Anderson, Owens, Hayworth. One and two back in '96 and '98. I got to tell this one story. We're like, our campaign strategy was sitting in the hot tub, drinking, eating pizza, And that's one thing. We don't worry about this crap. You go, it's going to be a statewide debate, and we're going to say freedom's the answer, what's the question, and, whatever, right?
Yeah, you go to the interviews of the paper or the editorial board, and they go, do you really think it can win? I go, I'm already won. I'm talking to you, ain't I?
this is one thing. When we had the statewide debate, and this was national. I mean, this stuff was, it was the most expensive congressional race. It was, the R's and D's were fighting over control or whatever the hell. And the damn libertarian Bob Anderson's in there, mucking up their crap. Well, last night we talked to Mike Duggar. We were in the audience. A bunch of us were there. We're in the audience. I don't know, it was police or Secret Service. Somebody came in and took Mike outside. Because he had a fanny pack on, and they wanted to search him. They're like, look, he didn't have a gun, but the whole halftime probably did. I mean, whatever. But so they took him outside, and they wanted no probable cause or nothing. They're gonna search his fanny pack, and they made and he didn't have a gun. And sorry to bother you, kind sir. It's like, wow. They were definitely worried about libertarians, because a lot of us will be armed all the time. It's campaign night. They take pictures of us. Half of us got our guns on and all that kind of stuff. We were definitely pushing the gun thing. So in there, it was PBS. It was a public television station.
Yeah, League of Women Voters, I think.
Yeah. And they were doing, that was a whole other story. I got a bunch of League of Women Voters stories. And they were just part of the corruption. It's so bad. So, yeah, all these things that people are starting to realize now, we knew 30 years ago. We're going, oh, you think that's bad? Let me tell you how long this has been going, how bad it really is. And then these people that were doing it are now in charge, and they're the ones, industrially doing it. And, and pass laws make it legal to do it. I mean, it's just amazing. So then they had the debate, and I remember the big issue was that this is the late 90s, and they knew that within a decade, or by certainly 2012, I think was the year, that Social Security and all the entire, we'd be insolvent. You know, it was just not, they're going to have to just print money to this hand, and we're done. And when we just, and you know, Austrian economics or just not being an idiot, you knew that, man, the dollar's done. I mean, this is just, it's just a ticking time bomb. And then you had the, you know, the dot-com bubble that happened right after that. You had 9/11 and whatever the hell they did with that. You had the 7 and 8, whatever they did with that. You were going on the stimulus and stuff they're doing now. Was going with that. It's just getting worse. It's just kicking the can down the road. It's getting bad. Here comes the freaking inflation and start. I mean, oh my God! All right. And that's when we did a time capsule. You know, years ago, about a decade ago. Whenever I go out, I've only been out to it like 3 times. We go out. What do? I get the Wednesday newspaper coupons of whatever the cost of beef and meat and TVs and whatever, and I put them in there. And you go look at it and you go, holy shit, 89 cents a pound hamburger? I go, yeah, man, them days are gone. So we were at the debate, and the big issue was Social Security. And, you know, of course, the Republican, you know, J.D. Hayworth gets up, and he was like a I went to church with him.
He reminded me of the cartoon character Foghorn Leghorn.
He was McGill a gorilla, man. He'd get purple. He'd get mad.
But the way he'd talk, you know, he just it cracked me up. You
know? Well, he was a sportscaster on NBC or something here, you know, whatever. So anyway, he was not all there. I mean, none of these guys are. And the ones that are freaking evil, you know, like, either they're just weird, man. So we've known a lot of these guys either personally or, you know, during campaigns or that kind of stuff. So you get to see them in the green room or behind the scenes. And I remember, nice JD, I was running for Secretary of State, so I would go statewide, right? So I would be in, you know, like Phoenix area, you know, the South Phoenix and retirement communities, was it, where the hell they were, Sun Lakes or something, right? And I remember I was there with J.D. Hayworth, and he's going on about rambling about something, and Trent Franks there going on about whatever. And then we'd be up, and because the same district, yeah, the gerrymander goes all the way up to Flagstaff. So I go up to Flagstaff, and I go to church with J.D. Hayworth. And he's up there seeing something totally different, 180 degrees from whatever philosophy he was espousing these retirement communities. He's up there because that is the bastion he's running against. English, I think her name was, incumbent or something, a Democrat. And I'm going, what the hell is that, JD? You said this, and then 2 days later you're saying that? And he goes, well, you know, it's politics, man. Where are we at here? He's going, oh, okay, well, shit, I guess that's okay then, you know. They're not espousing any philosophy. They're not advocating. They just want to get elected, you know. So I'm just going, all right. And when you, whatever. I know some of the politicos, well, it's what you do.
It's why
the libertarian, ain't what we do.
That's why the libertarians, you know, drive them nuts. Cause, it's, you know, we're principle.
So we have that, and the whole thing was, it was him versus the former state chair of the Democratic Party. Or he was right up until he started running. So it was really this Republican, you know, Christian, conservative, sports casting kind of machine versus the Democrat machine. And the unions there, they spent tens of millions of dollars. It was ridiculous. And here's Bob. At the end, Bob was 10 times the difference between the two. Took them weeks to find out who won. And they just, man, and he almost lost because he didn't seem libertarian enough, neither of them. So they ignored that there was a libertarian in the race. And he goes, my liberal opponent. That's all he would say, referring to the Democrat. They wouldn't acknowledge that there was a libertarian in the race at all. During the debate, statewide, you know, this all builds up to this big debate. They're going on about Social Security and how they're going to build a firewall around, you know, Social Security, and we're not going to, it's not going to be using general fund anymore, blah, 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 blah. Then it's Bob's turn. What'd you say?
I said, I just want to build a firewall around my wallet.
And a pin drop, I mean, you know, it was a mic drop. It was awesome. And we're all just laughing our ass off, you know. And everything Bob said was, and you kind of went Western wear, you know, and you had your hat and stuff like that. He's got, I'm doing rural Arizona. And that's how they know him up in northern Arizona and so on. So it was just, they can't stand it. So 2 years later, it was the same race, same three guys. And it was, you know, Anderson, Owens, Hayworth, part D, you know? So it goes in, and the whole time, what was it, JD, your bestest buddy?
My bestest buddy. My good friend, libertarian Bob Anderson.
My good friend. You know, and we were doing it, and I remember we were at church, And it was a big church. It was North Phoenix Baptist Church, which had, I mean, it had its indoor skating rink. I mean, it's one of these places, you know. And it had big, you know, like a college stairways that you would go. They're like, you know, God, 8 feet wide, you know, as you're going down in this. So I remember we were in the stairwell. We were getting our kids. And he goes up to me and he goes, we're at church. It's Sunday. We're getting, got little kids with us, you know. And he goes, Ernie, if you guys keep running, you know, in these races against us, you're going to elect Democrats. And I'm like, well, you're confusing me with someone that thinks there's a difference. He went purple. There was another guy that was just like him. It was John McCain.
Oh, yeah.
You get them going, and I mean,
pop out in the middle of their forehead.
Oh, man. It was, they're not right in the head, man. They're not. There's something else going on. I don't know what the hell, you know. And Trent Franks and I, we were friends, you know, for a long time. But he was part of the, I mean, we were friendly. I mean, you know. But went to the same church. He ran the nursery. He helped raise my kids. I mean, you know, they were, you know, from the time they were born up through. And he was always doing the nursery, him and I think it was Joni, was his wife. And these guys, I had him thumping me in the sternum with his finger. I mean, it hurt. He's going, and you know, about abortion or something like that. He's going, Trent, man, chill the F out, man. What? But I tell you what they did. You know, Trent was really big about this. He had those personal data assistants before smartphones when you'd get, you know, any and everybody he ever even met. You know, they went in his database, man. He was all about that. And they would come to our headquarters talking about Second Amendment. We were so effective that they had to be, and we would be nice to everybody. Everybody's, well, yeah, sure, whatever. The informants, the FBI guys, BATF, whatever, man. We don't care, you know. We just, because we had, you know.
We weren't doing it.
Yeah, we weren't doing anything other than advocating a philosophy. And they thought we had all kinds of stuff on them, and we did. We knew they were scumbag because of their intent. Everything that we learned, the laws don't matter. It's what their intent is. Their intent is to rule and dominate. And they're going to do it whatever way they're going to do it and get people in there to do it, and we'll reward them to do it. So they want to be in there to do it, and I'm going to get mine and do it, and I got my, you know, retirement congressional if I did it. You know, it's just, it's amazing. One of the things, I don't know if this is true. I think in Congress, you don't get a congressional retirement if you just win one term.
No, I think you got to do the two terms.
Yeah, I think you got to. I think you got to get reelected, so you're on the gravy train forever. You know, so their big thing is getting reelected, and then they're like, "Hey, cool, you know, now I can, you know, get my pension or whatever the hell." So that's what their big thing, and it's to get elected, and to get reelected, then you're on the gravy train. Okay, and that reelected part, that's what they threaten you with, and that's why they don't do the retirement thing unless you do, because you want to get all these bennies, you have to get reelected, and we can help you do that, you know, that kind of thing. So we've been through this. I got a gazillion stories on this, and Bob was there for all of it. And the one thing that you can always count on them doing is trying to limit your gun rights. This has been of all the things that we have done, it is, that's why it's, as L. Neil Smith would always say, it's a Vulcan mind meld into how they see the populace, your livestock.
You're going to eat grass.
All right, you got to tell people the grass thing.
It was a few years ago. It was at the time, you know, it was like ouch, quit it with North Korea, so they wanted to paint them as battle-light as they could. But there was they were going through some sort of famine over there, or they were, you know, they're continuously in a state of famine.
North Korea.
But there was a thing out, and you can go look an article up. I sent you know, a couple of them when we were talking about it, if you go back and look for it, is that they had cookbooks for grass, because the people were starving so much over there. They'd go out and they'd harvest the grass and try to cook it and eat it to at least give them something in their bellies, because, you know, they were starving to death. And that's what they, you know, from a leadership standpoint, you know, if you're an evil, despotic leader, that's a score. I got these guys that are coming out, they're going to the factories or sweeping the street or doing whatever I tell them they got to do to make a living, and then they're out there grazing in the fields. You're livestock. And they will, you know,
Kim Young grandfather freaking won, man.
Yeah, and if the people don't think that's what's coming here, they're kidding themselves. They will, once they get the collar around your neck, it'll just be if it'll take a generation, you'll be eating grass. Your livestock.
You know, and to think that the Republicans weren't part of this is to be naive. You know, every part of it. Here in Arizona, it you get high enough up on, that's why I always say this, because I know from experience, you go high enough up on, you know, the pyramid, left, right side, sooner or later you got the all CNI controlling everything. You know, it's all the same people. You know, I mean, it's been, and they know we know. I mean, I've been invited and gone to and worked with, you know, a lot of these different groups and hanging out, and it's been, you know, I've been kind of overt. I go, yeah, communist. No, what? Like, you're a communist. This is what you do. You kind of tell me you're not. You know, what's the difference? And they'll be, you know, I don't want to talk to him anymore. You know, the one person I have to say that it's almost like fear that avoids me like the plague. After early on, they were trying to co-opt me. They, you know, it's a long story, but they, and he knows that, no, hell no, it was Jeff Flake, you know, former U.S. Senator. Because I know what, and he knows I know. And he, when I go, we're at some big, you know, function or 25th anniversary of the Goldwater Institute at the Arizona Biltmore, blah, 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 blah. You know, Matt Salmon's coming up. Oh, here's the guy that cost me the election and blah, 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 blah. You know, that kind of crap. You know, or Jeff, boom, and he's gone. You know, it's like, he can't, man, there's no way in hell is either photobomb and kind of me in the possibility of being in the same breathing atmosphere of Ernie.
You are that crucifix for that vampire.
Right. You know, it's weird. You know, I'm going, we knew all the same people and were supposed to be, you know, in the, you know, kind of libertarian kind of, which he knew that was bullshit. You know, so it's, you have to understand here in Arizona, that's why I knew when we came back, they always look at it like Russell Pierce, that was, you know, president of the Senate, and he's, you know, whatever. He was the only Arizona politician that has ever been successfully recalled, or certainly any state legislator, because you have to wait, I think, 6 or 7 months into their term to even file a recall, and then you're into the election cycle for, you know, the next year anyway. So, but he was, now he deserved it. Well, a bunch of Ron Paul, you know, supporting people went after him because, you know, it was immigration stuff that he was doing, which really wasn't immigration. It was a database. It was a federal database, and it went straight. When Napolitano left as governor, she goes Department of Homeland Security. That database they did went straight to her, and it was all planned. And it was, you know, and Russell Pierce used to be director of the Motor Vehicle Department, and he was part of he wanted everybody to have an ID. This was all planned. And they go, oh, we passed a law. You can't have, you know, real ID and all that kind of stuff, which they had already had it because it was called the Western Hemisphere Travel Initiative, and, you know, your gold star, and you're like, all this crap. And already, so I'm outing them on my radio show. I'm going, look, read it. Let's read it. I read it on the air and then sent it to legislators, and they stopped the hearing. They were going to vote on it. Whoa, 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 whoa. Ernie did a show on them. We're reading. Does this really mean this? Is that what he's? Because they usually just vote and they don't give a crap. They just do whatever they're told. But enough people knew, said, you need to listen to that. What? And they went, because all we did was actually read the bill. So Russell Pierce on Senate letterhead. I was going to Liberty Forum in New Hampshire the day before I left. He called me a domestic terrorist on state. President of the Senate letterhead. So we filed an ethics complaint that you are, you know, it was Michael Kilsky, he was the state chair at the time. He's also an attorney. And I didn't do it because whatever, you know, you spelled it right. I don't care. But it was Boston Tea Party. He goes, Ernie, you have to challenge this. If you don't, man, you're going to be marked a domestic terrorist. You won't be able to, blah, blah, blah. They're going to put you on the list. And I go, all right, I know how to have some fun. So,
probably already on the list.
Yeah, top of the list, safer there. So what happened was, when you do an ethics complaint, you have to do it a certain way. You have to do it to each of the members of the ethics committee, and you got to do it in a certain format, a certain time, certain way, certain. but they don't publicize how to do it. You don't even know who's on the ethics committee. It's like a secret or something. And he goes, but what they didn't know is we had somebody on the inside, you know, our friend John Green, you know, that knew how to do it, knew who they were, and gave us all the information so that we did it properly, so that they had to have a hearing or they had to do some ethics, you know, BS, which they don't care. They're going to do what they're going to do. But so we went through this, and the argument that Kilski made was this. With legislation in consideration, we had the president of the Senate using Senate letterhead to quell First Amendment free speech of an individual before pending legislation. Oh, and he was right. You know, and they went, whoa. So they backed the truck up on that one, man. They said, man, we did not want to do that. Well, then he lost his recall election, and that had a lot to do with it. The only one, as sitting president of the Senate, lost the recall election. They put in, I don't even know, who cares, you know. And so from then on, they always said Ernie and his people. Well, Ernie and his people will do this, and Ernie and his people do that.
You got
Ernie,
people?
Yeah, right. Exactly. So I'm going, woo, I got peoples, man. Right on. You know, it's not about philosophy. It's not about, you know, you're right or anything. It's just like, you know, Ernie and his people. Well, what the hell does that mean, you know? And it was supporters of, you know, just not being dicks. And so this is what they're afraid of. They know that, you know, I've been out of local politics. So, you know, I'll help and I do different things and we're activists and it's more about general public opinion thing. But if, as we're going into what's coming, and Bob's in, I mean, we've talked about this for a long time. We're, you know, and you're retired and Doogie's retired and, you know, Gary's getting retired. A lot of us now, we did this as part-time kind of whatever, and we're going, God, man, all the, you're doing it?
It's time to get the band back together.
You know, we got some time and a little bit of man. Shit, we got technology on our side now, you know? So this is, and I think they think that they're going to, I don't know. You know, none of their fear, tactic, threat, coercion, BS worked before. I don't know what they think. They're going to have to actually shoot you. They're going to have to, you know, I don't know what they're going to do. Every time they do anything, we always got, you know, 10 times as much press of what jerks they were. So I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, they're damn serious.
Oh, yeah.
They ain't going to like it.
No, I think a lot of it's going to come down to, you know, the whole vote. I think they, up until, you know, probably the last 10 years or whatever, they at least gave reasonable consideration to general public opinion when it came to going to the polls. And now I
now know, it's just what Facebook tells
yeah,
them. To
yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like, you know, now you know, they, obviously they don't give a crap about what the vote is. Maybe there'll be enough eyes on what's going on after this last election in some of these key states that you're going to have some states not able to cheat, or the cheat will be a lot less or a lot harder, or, you know, and so you may actually
know.
Get
they,
some changes.
They haven't cared yet. I mean,
yeah, you know, so. Well, there's going to be states that aren't going to change. You know, it's like, you know, your Michigans and those kind of, you know,
we're going to see what's going to happen with like California.
California.
You know, what's his name? Newsom?
Newsom
and Elder?
Elder.
Yeah. You know, that's, I'm semi almost paying attention to that, yeah, just for the fallout.
Have you seen some of the stuff? You know, I didn't follow it as much because, like, you know, still voting. But apparently there's like a little hole or, you know, pit punch mark or something that just happens to line up.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Line up with the selection. So they can either see what it is, or somebody can fill it in from outside the envelope, or they can spoil the ballot, or, you know,
right.
It's like.
This is what's going on. And they described this, and it was just some voter, she goes, what the hell is this? You have an early ballot that comes to you. You have the early ballot that you vote. You have the envelope that you send it. For some reason, it's like two punch holes that are in the front of the envelope. And it's for, I don't know, because it got punch holes in it. You know, it's like having a window or something. I have no idea. And it's like a punch hole. It's about the size of a loose leaf punch hole.
Just about the size of the little circle that you got to fill in for the vote.
Right. If you fold the paper in a certain way, you just fold the paper and you put it back in the envelope. Well, if you have it facing one way, there's two questions on the ballot. One, should Newsom be recalled, yes or no? there's a little bubble there, and you fill that in with a pencil or something. Then the other one, okay, you want them recalled. Now who do you want to replace them? Then you have the candidates. So one, she goes, the first thing is, one, you can't just vote for the person. You have to mark yes or no. Yes, he needs to be recalled. And then you pick the replacement. You got to know to do that because you got to know to do that. So then when you fold it and you put it in the envelope, you can look in this little hole. Hell, you don't even have to, like, move it over. I mean, you can see it, that it has that. Did you put yes? You filled in the bubble on. You can see it through the envelope that you said, yes, he needs to be recalled. It's like they don't even have to open it. They're just like, and she's going, does anybody think that that's, like, stupid, you know? Well, they revel in stupid. I mean, that's why they do it. So this is, on so many levels, such a crock of shit that I... So, I mean, I guess the solution is you turn it around, but then you can see, you know, who you're voting. I mean, it's stupid.
Yeah.
It's just stupid. On top of stupid with some more stupid. And it's just... I just thought that typical. I mean, what'd you think?
Yeah. No, I would be... I wasn't even surprised.
I was like, I've been surprised if they didn't have something like that. And they do the same thing here. We've gone... This is not where the solution's going.
This whole Sharpiegate thing, you know, everybody poo-pooed it and poo-pooed. But apparently, you know, at least the word on the street is what's going to come out of this Arizona audit is Sharpiegate was real.
Of course it was.
Yeah.
No, I know what happened. This is what happened. In the East Valley, it was heavily Republican, okay? So this mostly happened in the Southeast Valley there. So what they did...
They're doing it here in Tonopah.
Yeah, no, I'm sure they were doing it, you know, everywhere, but this was definitely a thing, you know, there. At least that's what they were telling me, you know, but this is what they did. When you do the ballots, you get like a number two pencil and you fill in the bubbles or something, or a pen or whatever it was, right? And you run it through the machine, it scans it, it goes, okay, this is who they voted for or whatever. And you have candidates on the front and the back. If you use a black Sharpie, it bleeds through, and the machine would kick it out and say, oh, no, you know, we can see it on the other side. This is a spoiled ballot. You have to manually have somebody, you know, determine who they were voting for. So what they did is they said, all right, this is how we're going to do it. They gave out Sharpies to everybody, you know, and certainly there, that was where they, you know, saw that it had a big impact on the election, but they were doing it everywhere. And you got a Sharpie, which you're not supposed to use, and they know it. They're, no, here, use this Sharpie. They give them Sharpies. So they fill it in, hand it back, run it through the machine. It would kick it out. Then big stacks, tens of thousands of them, go to Maricopa County elections to where an individual
decides who you really wanted to vote for.
Exactly. And they decided, well, then you go, all right, well, we need to see the ballots. Let's show them the ballot. Well, no, because what they would do is they say, you know, I think what they did is they re-voted it.
Yes.
They would throw that away, or they'd call it a spoiled ballot, and then they would refill in what you wanted and do what they said you were voting for. This is just one of the things that they did. This was so, it is so, to think, after what has been happening in Arizona and just our knowledge of how, you know, the people are here and everything, that Trump lost Arizona is a freaking joke. That is why the audit was such a big deal to have it done here. Because it was, everybody went, what the hell was that? You know, and of course, there was five counties around the country. And you know who predicted it? I mean, a year before? You know, just predicted, you know, the summer before the election.
It was Tarzan, wasn't it?
No, it was Tim Pachote.
Tim Pachote.
He has video of him at an Acapulco in Mexico. He goes, let me tell you how they're going to do it. They need five counties in these states, and they're going to, I mean, he just detailed, that's exactly what they did. And I'm going, Tim, you the man, you know, because he just looked at his financial guy, I can tell you how they're going to do it. You know, where they're going to do it. And sure as hell, I knew they were going to do it in Maricopa. And these guys are, and we know the people that we dealt with when we were officers in the party, go down to county elections and those scumbags that then become legislators and then they're county supervisors that are hiding the whatever. And I don't want to say his name, but his initials are Steve Gallardo. And I'm just like, you know, this is, I, that guy, I'm going, man, he reeks of this. He is so Soros'd up. And he was all buddies with Kirsten Sinema, which is Soros to do again. Yeah, sue me. Come, bring it. I want to do discovery. Let's play. I never do that. I usually don't name names and whatever. It's just, you know, functionary or whatever. But, man, that is some dangerous individuals there. And I knew it a long time ago. These are the people that... So, they're already, why didn't you do anything? What the hell you think I've been doing? You know, I mean, what am I supposed to do? You know, I'm going, you know, look, he's back. Go get him. Who do you report it to?
Yeah. Walk down the street, kick his dog. I mean, yeah, what are you going to do?
You know, it's our fault for letting it happen. And people thinking they're going to vote themselves free. You know, we're going to vote harder this time. You know, I'm going, man, you guys don't understand what's going on. Do you think when they deal with trillions of dollars in, hell, just stimulus BS or wars and all this kind of, you think they roll dice?
Leave it per chance, yeah.
You know, they're going to leave it up to the American voter? You think that's what happens? You know, do you? Do you think that? Why would you think that? I just want to shake these NPCs out of, you know, freaking rip their mask off and slap them, you know, and go, wake up. But the problem is, a lot of them know it, and they're for it, because they think they're going to be part of the guys to do it, and they're the first to the chambers.
Yeah, I can't, you know, you can't tell me that a vast majority of the voters who wanted Biden to get elected don't realize how he got elected, and they're okay with it because they're side one.
Man, freaking Trump!
You know, if the
gotta get rid of Trump, man. Trump.
If the referee made a bad call and we won the game, we won the game. They don't care.
There's no do-oversies, you know. So I'm hoping that, you know, as we go through this year's process, I'm getting a lot of confirmation that the people that have been just, no, it's our team versus their team, it better be our team and not their team, they're starting to realize that, no, this is, the team is people versus whoever the hell everybody
they
else.
And those.
Yeah, you know, it's, you know, they're not doing it. So what's the timing as this plays out? You know, we got the economy going to, you know, there it comes, inflation, the dollar and all that stuff. We have
$10 rabbit meat.
Yeah, tell people what you're talking about.
Oh, you know, we were goofing around the other day when we were in for some reason we started talking about lamb chops or something like that. So I wonder what lamb costs these days. So I went to, you know, you look it up on Google, you know, like the price of lamb, and there's an ad for a company that sells lamb. So I click on it, and, you know, it just, oh, here's the prices. Well, I'm getting bombarded. Well,
I'm clicked on it, so you're screwed.
Yeah, I'm getting bombarded with it. But, you know, one of the ads came up, and it was, you know, rabbit meat. And I was like, well, rabbit, you know, it's rabbit meat. You know, like, well, wonder what rabbit, $10 a pound. I'm like, you're going to be kidding me.
And they're just showing a whole rabbit there.
Yeah,
you
it's
know?
Like, it's like, you know,
rabbit stew.
Yeah, it's like, I wonder what squirrel meat is. Yeah, I mean, it's like, wow.
Yeah, we go out to Jackalope, was it last year, year before, Danny got a squirrel pellet gun, and now you got to cook it.
Yep.
You know, we ate it, you know.
And he did.
You know.
Tastes like rabbit.
You know, the, so rabbits, that's one thing that Greg, you know, super meme Greg, you know, when he's out here in Levine before he moved to Missouri, you know, he had a bunch of rabbits, man. Rabbit, you start doing rabbits, man, you got a lot of rabbits.
Yeah. Well, it might be a picture on the wall. My grandfather used to do rabbits. Never thought about, you know, because, I mean, it's old black and white pictures back from the, you know, 30s or 40s, whatever it was. But we have a picture somewhere of him, and he's standing with this big, huge white rabbit in his hands, and there's, like, got to be 30 or 40 rabbits around him. Just on the ground hopping around. That's what he did. It was meat rabbits. He raised rabbits. Rabbits are an excellent animal to raise for meats. In fact, they're one of the most efficient animals for turning feed into protein. A pound of food makes much more protein in a rabbit than it does any other animal.
And they breed like
rabbits.
Rabbits, yeah.
You know, but
so I'm going, God, if you need it, see, that's one thing that they're going to make people hungry, and you got them by the belly, you got them.
2 weeks.
You need to start your chickens and rabbits now.
When you can't get to the supermarket or they won't give you food or whatever it is, you got about 2 weeks, and after that, there's no fight left in you, and then it's just a slow starvation. You know, it's not even like you can
armies
fight back.
Run on their stomach.
Yeah, you can't eat after 2 weeks. You're done.
and they will starve you to death, because that's what despots have been doing since the beginning of time. You go back and read histories, a lot of these genocides, what they did in the Ukraine, and China, it's you just cut the food off. It's cheap. You don't even got to spend bullets on it.
That was easy.
Yeah, within 2 weeks, boom, fight's gone.
So we, fortunately, technology is such now that you can store a lot of food, fairly cheaply, and keep, especially in Arizona, dry as hell, man. You can just open the bag so you can dry it out. But the meat is a thing. And I really like chickens, just the eggs. I mean, I don't have to kill anything. We did the turkeys that one year, just because Donna, I'm not man enough to be able to kill my own turkey for Thanksgiving, whatever. Finally, I had to go, all right, fine, this year or whatever. And she's not a fan anymore, because they, turkeys are like dogs. Yeah. I mean, they follow you around, and they're like pets, and the grandkids were naming them. And I go, no, they're dinner, man. And we got eight, and then each of us kicked in 25 bucks, and Donna and I raised them. And then the Sunday before Thanksgiving, we went out and we butchered them. And it was Leo, versed in dressing birds. He raises rabbits and quail and turkey, whatever. And he's like, all right, show us what's up. We tried different ways and everything. And we went through. By the time we got to the last one, a coyote got one of them, before, our dogs went after him, but, dead. And then, so we had seven, and we split them up, amongst us. And I think I had more than one, so I at least got one. And, all right, how are we going to do this? And the last one, we're going, there's one missing. And the rest of them, pick me, I'm next. I mean, it was sad, man. They're dumb, but there was one. He was in the chicken coop. She's going, oh, I can do it. I can lay an egg, man. I can be a contender, So we're like, all right, got to go get him.
It's like Chicken Run. I don't want to be a pie.
Right. And so it was good that the grandkids and everybody, we went through this process, to do your own turkey for Thanksgiving kind of thing. But yeah, I didn't dig it.
People need to see where their food comes from.
It made Tarzan Keith. He went vegetarian after that.
Really?
Yeah. He went vegan. He said, "Nah, I'm good. That's all the nudge I needed. I think I'm not going to do it. But when you're, he's not going to freaking, get on anybody else's ass, I guess. And when it comes down to you be hungry, I've said, come here. Turkey, and my dog is looking mighty tasty, So it's
that dog is mighty fine eating.
Yeah, mighty fine eating. That's a good meal. The Patriot, Mel Gibson. But so if you're not getting ready for food now, you're making yourself vulnerable by your mind won't work right. You are only thinking about food after. I mean, I've gone on 3 week fast before. I got 20 days. I lost like 30 pounds. Oh, yeah. After you get past the first 3 days, then it's like, it's not that big a deal. I mean, you're like, I could probably eat, but I'm just, I went cold turkey. I did it probably four times. I've gone at least 3 day fast. And the reason was more a health thing. I just wanted to clean it, because it will clean you out. I mean, it's a biblical thing. You do 3 days just to, freaking reset crap, and Dr. Mikovits is all about at least once a year, do a 3 day fast just to reset and get rid of the whatever, And so it's not uncommon now. I've probably done it, four or five times over the last few years. But, I really just said, I'll go a week. And then I went, maybe I ate a little, spinach or something. I don't know. I mean, not a single calorie. And people don't believe I do that. I go, no, not a single calorie went in my mouth for over a week. Okay. A couple of times. 2 weeks. And that was with not a lot of physical effort either. I mean, I wasn't like working out or something.
I just look at, you get that show on TV, Naked and Afraid kind of thing, and they're out there, trying to eat bugs and worms and stuff and get by. And that's why that show is set at 21 days. Because after about 21 days, those people can hardly walk if they haven't been able to find calories.
Yeah, 3 weeks you can go 3 minutes without air, 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food.
Yeah. So
That's a standard.
Yeah. So I'm saying after about 2 weeks, there's no fight left in you. You just better find some food because you're on the fast track to dead.
Which is what they're counting on.
Absolutely.
They're doing the food chain. There is no resistance. You know, all of a sudden the helicopter, it's like in, you know, Red Dawn, their original one back in the 80s, you know, when it was really the Afghanistan crap was going on and it was Reagan and all that. That really hit a lot of people hard how it was really going to be. And, you know, Red Dawn with Patrick Swayze back in the day, you know.
Before his dancing days.
Right. And what were they doing? You know, helicopters, you know, Chinese dropping in food. Oh, we're here. We love you. You know, and it was all about food.
Yeah, you look at Somalia. How do you think those warlords controlled all these people?
Because we gave them food to control them with.
That's right. We'd bring a bunch of food in to feed the people. We'd give it to the warlords. And then the warlord's like, hey, you're either my buddy or you're a starving dead person.
Food. Food, food, food. That's why I say almost every show I go, this is going to be a food thing.
It always is.
And if you're not prepping for that, if you're not, you know, I don't know, how many months, years do you need food for your family? What do you think?
Oh, I think with what's going on now, you know, these people that are like, I got 5 years, it ain't going to be 5 years. I think this is going to be settled one way or the other by midsummer, next summer.
When do you think it's going to start?
This winter. They're going to use this current, because like I say, for some reason, they're getting pretty desperate. Whatever timeline they're on, their evil lizard overlords or whatever going, hey, you ain't, you know, you're behind schedule. We got a project here and you're not making it happen. So I think they're going to use this fall when the normal respiratory winter season rolls around, all the, you know, the normal flu and all the other, not that, you know, they're just
The normal flu is going to get amped because of these shots.
That's right.
That's the point.
That's right. So you're going to have a lot of stuff going on. And of course it's going to be the evil Delta variant or whatever, you know, there'll be whatever it is they want to call it.
Your immune system is set. That's where the ivermectin thing becomes a big deal and hydroxychloroquine, because it kind of resets your immune system, what the damage they did. See, it's not like the virus itself. It's you. It's your immune system. And that's why you have all these autoimmune diseases and all these chronic blah, 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 blah. It's you fighting you. They've set you up to be your own worst enemy,
right?
You know, literally. And I'm just, and that's what the, I'm talking to these doctors and scientists. So I'm going, so what the hell, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, what does it do? And then they get all geeky about it, you know, how it works and why and so on. But basically, it resets your immune system so that you're not attacking yourself anymore, you know, so that everything that comes in isn't getting like the special forces inflammation and blah, blah, blah. Because inflammation is the problem. That's what's happening. Inflammation is there, you know, for the, you know, the fire, the heat, the you know, to try and kill and do it, but not everything needs a freaking, you know, fire, get a fever and autoimmune and inflammation and all this crap, and it messes up all your organs, because the first line of defense is hell, your mucus or you know, just your T cells or your macrophage, blah, 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 all this other crap, and the stuff that they're looking at, to have your cells start to produce an antibody, a lot of times it may not even need to get to that point, you know? So it's just they're programming how to kill us.
Right.
They've been experimenting on it. They're working on it. And now they set your body up for when the next infection, when there is some flu thing, whether they manufactured or it's just natural, it's going to start laying waste to people. And this was one thing. We did a story last month or something. It was a woman that was in the oil and gas industry, and she used to be a nurse or medical something or whatever, and then she went back and she had enough of that, and she went into human resources in the oil and gas industry and going to these different seminars and stuff. They always got some convention about something, you know, and she goes, you know, about staffing requirement, how to recruit, and, you know, that kind of crap. And she goes, now they call it something. It has a name. But anyway, what she was doing is they were saying that they need to have 100% replacement or a third of their workforce in 3 years. They go, you need to be able to staff up to do this in 3 years. None of these employees are going to be able to work anymore or something like that. So, and she put that up. She goes, and she had the seminar and all the material and what was going on. I'm going, Wow. They're planning in 3 years they're going to have to replace the entire workforce?
Yeah. That's why Pfizer doesn't let their employees get the jab.
Yeah, what up with that?
Because they...
And the CDC and, you know, some government agencies and, you know... They're not doing it.
They don't want to have to replace those guys in 3 years. You know, they're probably a little hard to train.
And, So it's going to be
this winter. You're going to see it, and they're going to ramp it up, and it's going to be, you know, the vitriol about the unvaxxed is going to become hyperbolic. They're going to really try to push the mandates. You're already seeing this stuff that we were talking about, these counterfeit cards that are coming in from China.
I got a real bullet.
And so what they're doing is they're setting everybody up for this digital vaccine passport. Because you won't be able to counterfeit that, and you're going to need it to get into the stores to get food, and
get your universal basic gimme money.
Yeah, the whole bit. That's where it's going to come down to is that they have to get people hooked into this system, and it's going to have to be done this fall because by summertime, one, the oh my godness will go away, much like it did this last year, right? It was horrible in the February, March, April, and then by summer it started to taper off because they lose the undercover that they get from the seasonal flu and respiratory stuff that comes around in the winter, and congressional elections are every 2 years, and they're going into the election season starting in March, April, May, June kind of thing.
They do not want to have people being for staying open, and we're not for this crap, and the people get the vote and sign and get all uppity and whatever. Hell no.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. I think it because the election season usually starts the Labor Day before the election year, which means...
like a couple days.
Yeah, we got a campaign going up now. Yeah.
Like I say, that's what they have to do. And much as we've talked about in the last 2 days or, a couple weeks, I've been talking to you about it, there are going to be states that will not play, and they can't have that. So whatever evil false flag thing they're planning to justify that they can go in and put the states under their boot that aren't playing,
how they're getting away with it. They don't care about the states. They already went down to the counties. They're controlling counties. This is county health of county guy, county commissioner, county crap, you know? And they have to, it's like DeSantis in Florida says, nope, no mandates. You're not doing it. You can't do it. You don't do it. And then you got school districts going, we're doing it anyway. We don't know about making, and then you got Biden administration going, oh, yeah, they can do whatever they want and screw you and, the school board of county official or something. I mean, it's just, and then it's going to get down to what it really is going to come down to. It's going to be the banks. It's going to be, are you able to use your credit card? Yeah. Is your business able to accept credit cards? Are you an evil, misinforming media outlet? When they did, and I didn't pay much attention to it.
I mean, when they sit there and if they declare a national lockdown, the easiest way to do the lockdown for the people that aren't going to comply, they'll just turn off the banking system.
Well, they're going after, that's what, I didn't really understand what this NewsGuard, New York Times thing was about for Freedom's Phoenix until, Bob's going to freak out, we're going to talk about it. But the, it was labeling you misinformation.
Yeah.
They go, and this is what, I can see the same tactic, it's like the same consulting firm doing the same thing for crypto. It's a fraud. They have to go, misinformation, you're frauding, you're damaging, it's forcing fraud. The fraud gives us jurisdiction to do it because you're not telling the truth, you liar. So they're saying that fraud is determined by them, not after the fact, or we go get a judge, or you got probable cause, or you got something. They go, no, we're preemptive minority report fraud. It's not any one thing. Okay, well, let's go. Well, it's not what the CDC says, so I don't give a crap what they say. They don't have to show me. Hell, just, sequence me the virus. Show me you even got one. Never mind. It's so obvious. And I tell you, who was way ahead of this, saw it, could see where it was going, Dr. Judy Mikovits. That's why I enjoy. I gotta say, I didn't really understand the first year or two. I'm talking, she just rattle off on, I hate this guy and this guy's good and this is a bad guy. She's going about Frank Rossetti that she worked with, good guy, and she always was in Tony Fauci, scumbag Tony Fauci. I'm like, that didn't mean anything to me. Who the hell's Tony Fauci? Until this all happened, he gets up and I'm going, oh, because she was not really great at you know, she's more on the science. It was Kent Heckenlively, her co-author on the books, that would make what she says to where I can freaking understand what the hell is going on. And but I mean, I wish that I probably should have read all her books. I didn't, and that was my fault. And but I read all her stuff and articles, and of course we talked, and I asked all my questions. I'm sure the audience got a lot out of it. And a lot of times I would get more if I went and listened to the show that we did. But she didn't articulate the role that Tony Fauci had in this. And I think because she didn't know. When she did her first book, Plague, she didn't really realize. She was just telling her story of who did what, when, how, and what they're in their scumbag piece of crap and all the stuff that they did. And it wasn't until after she wrote the first book that when she was writing the second book and when all the people came to her and, you know, spewed what they knew, you know, for her writing the second book, Plague of Corruption, about really the role that Fauci, why he did all the stuff. She didn't know. And then that they had laws that they would, if the reason when they had an effective treatment against AIDS, because AIDS is just symptoms. It's like saying COVID. It's not a particular anything. It's just unhealthy living, this big viral load that they put in a bunch of crap and made you whatever the hell. So she's going, it's not a disease. It's a symptom, you know? So HIV may be the virus, but that is not that. We can stop the replication of the virus, and Magic Johnson's not dead. I mean, you know, he had HIV. I mean, it was not a death sentence. If you treat it right, you know what the hell you're doing. So the Dallas Players Club or something with McConaughey and so on, that kind of depicted a lot of it. And the band played on with Alan Alda. And all. She's going, look, we knew. She was one of the doctors that knew. There's a French doctors that had done it, and Frank Rossetti and her confirmed their results and found their own stuff. They knew Fauci didn't want that solution to be out and stopped it. And the reason was is because they stole what they knew about it, developed their own stuff, him and another doctor, so that they got paid. Because there was a law called the Bush-Dole Act or something like that, that made that if you had a treatment, certainly if it was accepted by the government and mandated, and this is the official of protocol of whatever the hell, Fauci and this other guy got all the money. It was a money thing. It always was a money thing. You know? So this is, and she, for the longest time, she didn't articulate that, and a lot of it because she didn't know. So when the next book came out and we're doing the interviews and people started coming out with all this stuff, and I'm going, well, hell, if I knew that law was in there, I could have told you what was going on and why. So and to think that Fauci's not doing it again, of course he is. You know, why do you think he's all buddies with the, you know, with Gates and who and this and that? Because if you can get your solution in, or your vaccine, or your company, or your warp speed of whatever the hell it is, ka-ching. This is Gates Bezos money, man.
Every 5 weeks, you need a shot.
Ah, yeah.
You need my shot. Every 5 weeks.
Gosh, it's just ridiculous. And to be fully vaccinated in Canada, they're talking 7 boosters already. You know, this is what I remember. And this plays into this. John McCain, when we went into Afghanistan and Iraq, I remember him saying something, this is going to be a 20-year war. Well, it was 20 years. I remember, you know, I forgot about that. McCain said, this will be a 20-year war. Right off the bat. Butler Schaefer.
He probably bought bonds that came to, you know, came to maturity
no
in
doubt,
20 years.
It was called Carlisle. Anyway, so when Butler Schaefer, a law professor that I had, I was a constitutional law professor at Southwestern University, and he died just last year. And he goes, he said, you know, they had the 7-day war, they had the 100-year war, they had the this war. And he goes, but didn't they name them after the war?
Yeah.
So it's nice of McCain to tell us 20 years and it was 20 years, and we're done, you know? They had a deadline, you know? That was Biden. We ran out of time, you know, it's over, you know? Because McCain said. I mean, there's something weird going on. And we're going to be, you know, I'm usually, you know, nothing surprises me
the
anymore.
The lizard overlords are coming.
You know, nothing surprises me, but I'm thinking I might get surprised when the veil comes out, you know, comes off of whatever the hell's going on. But the solution's always the same. is decentralization down to the individual rights of individuals. It's not a group thing. It's not, and that's what they try. And I think those know it. That's why they got to have all this group identity politic crap. They got to put you in some group, you know. Oh, can I be a me group? I mean, how about that? I vote me. You know, me. Because this whole experiment was about the individual. And that's now they're coming out openly saying individual rights is the problem. Yeah, we got your freedom.
It is.
Screw your freedom.
Well, depending on what side of the thing, whether it's a problem or a virtue. I mean, but that's what happens is socialism or communism, the antithesis of that is freedom. And you know, freedom is a natural state of the human being. You know, when you're just your pick a human out of the random population of, you know, you go to the jungles and pick some guy out of the Amazon that, you know, lives in his village of 100. It's innate within the human spirit to be free. And so by the virtue of you just being human, you don't want to be part of the collective. You know, everybody wants to cooperate and make life easier for everybody, but you certainly don't want to do it at the cost of your ability to decide what's best for yourself and your family and the people you care about. And that's not what socialism and communism is. And so they have to crush that. That has to go away. Freedom cannot exist for there to be a socialist or a communist utopia. And so freedom's got to go away. And so the rights of the individual for them is the problem.
You know, how do you think shots are going to be fired? Where's the reason? You got to make them make you.
Make them make
you. I'm feeling a sign coming on. Do we got to embellish it with anything or logo? I like just make them make you. I mean, that's make them make you. I mean, it's just, you got to make it. There's got to be resistance. You got to make them make you.
Maybe the break the chain.
Yeah, we used to have a logo. It was called the Almost Free Press that Bob had when we would do a lot of printing. And it was Lady Liberty had both hands or fists up in the air with a chain, and it had a link just about ready to break. And it was called the Almost Free Press.
Right.
And, and then it was, break the chains. Was it broken? You were running for city council.
Yeah, we did.
That's
a whole
another
city
thing.
Council
Bob ran for Phoenix City Council. We had a full slate, and I was like campaign chair of that, and mayor was Gary.
I still got the acetates hanging on the wall in Robert's room in there.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I saw them in there. You know, they don't even make those acetates anymore. You can't get them.
How do you do screens?
You don't. They do all digital printing now.
So all these, when they make a bazillion T-shirts?
No, you can get the
screen?
Small ones.
Oh,
but,
okay.
You know, like the big ones, you know, the 4x5s, we used to get the big ones. They don't do those anymore. You had to, like, overlap a bunch of little ones or some shit like that.
Yeah, really?
I know. I mean, that's hard. I got to, you know, I wonder if there's anybody that has those anymore, but they usually don't.
Huh.
That kind of bummed me out. You know, when I did the Stop Wars, you know, when the new Star Wars came out and we did that Stop Wars Home
thing?
Educate thing, you know, with Uncle Vader, you know, Uncle Sam Vader. That was an act of God for me to get that. That was like the last one. They had to piece it together and they said, oh, we can't do this anymore. That was just too much of a pain in the ass.
Huh.
You know, I'm going, damn. So anyway, I don't know how we would do it. I guess we have to make a stencil, cut it out or something. I mean, and then do the silk screen.
I bet you could get it on Alibaba.
Bet you we could too.
You have to buy a C-van load of it, but
that was a thing. Well, the acetate we were talking about, like overhead projectors, you have this black on a clear plastic. Well, if you get those like 4x5, you make this big screen that you can, you know, you can do silk screen on big signs that we do. And if we, you know, because we do stencils now and we do a spray because it's easy and it's something you can make your own that day. You know, everything's, it'd be a lot cheaper and faster if you do silk screen, but it's a little more complicated. I have all the silk screen stuff. You know, when we did this sign stuff, I was in Michigan, and we have right out there in the van.
It's like the South Park of sign making. You know, you can take an issue and have a sign that day.
That day. And that was kind of the thing, was speed, because especially when we used to be dealing with local press and the media and newspaper, they would do, and it was not that we could get our T-shirts screen printed cheaper doing it ourselves, but we could do it faster. You know, so we'd have a good sign today is better than a perfect one or a cheaper one tomorrow. So we would have, they'd do some stupid thing in the press. And we'd have T-shirts that afternoon. I mean, we would go, we show up and, you know, boom, hello, you know. And like Bob, he would go to where you did your first I am the NRA and I'm ashamed, you know, because they're compromising pieces of crap. Had somebody airbrush hand do it, you know. You know, it was the first one that you had done.
Yeah. Can we cut a break for a second?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, one thing we need to, you know, wrap this up with is plans for the future. We just talked to your son, and he's got, you know, a lot of beat on some solar stuff, and we need to get some batteries. And you know, he said he's got, you know, some stuff for him. It might be a while. And I go, good. That means we need to get it now while I can get in line and freaking get that's, stuff, you know,
that's
here. And that's one of the things when we look at a lot of the guys online. We've always been pimping Will Prowse. If you go on YouTube, Will Prowse, Prowse. He's a young kid. He's like 30, you know, but he's been, you know, started off in a travel trailer.
He was like, you know, living in an RV. And he, just because of his, you know, ability to talk in terms that people could understand, was very thorough about what he did, wasn't being influenced, made it very clear he's not on the hook to anybody. He doesn't take money from anybody. You know, it's just, this is the truth as I see it about these energy products, that people went and watched his YouTube channel. And last I saw, he's living in his big old house and up in Las Vegas somewhere, and he's got, you know,
all paid off
and stuff, you know. So I mean, he must be doing, you know, YouTube okay, because he, you know, he's squared away. And he does, I like him a lot.
I like that kid.
Yeah, I think he's pretty straight up. There's been a bunch of people coming out lately trying to, you know, copy the Will Prowse method, but you know, I mean, he's,
it's what we've always said, and this is one thing that we advocated over the years, and that's one thing that I emphasized on Freedom's Phoenix. The future is going to be about credibility. You know, if you're, you know, it's who you believe, and that's what they always counted on, is that, well, you got to believe, oh, I got a shiny badge.
Yeah, we'll tell you who you need to believe.
Right. You know, these guys are the misinformation people. Says who? Says you. Who are you?
Well, the misinformation people.
You know, but what we're doing is I talked to your son, Nick, and RV Solar Concepts, and he's got it going on. So if they start pressuring him at work, you got to, and I'm done, you know?
Yeah.
And so he's made a lot of contacts, and one of the battery systems that I was interested in, he has a line on the manufacturer for them, and they'll brand it as his own thing. Well, put me in line, man.
Yep.
I'm ready to spend some money. Let's get it done. So hopefully in the next few days we'll make that order and pay for it, and I got that done. I need, because I don't think when this goes, and it's going now, you're not going to be able to get them.
They're already making noise. I saw this article where they're like, you know, starting to choke down on, you know, cheap solar panels coming in from, you know, China, because they're all made with slave labor. And I'm like, you know, I feel kind of slavish every April 15th myself, you know, so, you know, probably a little better off over here. And they're not making us into agricultural supplements yet.
Right. So, you look like a big giant dose of Soylent Green.
Yeah,
you know?
So it's but the yeah, so I think you're right. I think it's going to get difficult. One, because they realize that technology allows people to be independent of their control grid, and so I could easily see that becoming an issue.
You know, it was years ago, it had to be at least 3 years ago, that I remember the country of Spain taxed sunlight.
Yeah.
The fact that you had solar, you got, you know, how much solar you generate? Well, that's going to cost you. You got to pay some tax on that. And I'm like, wow, that they even think this way. They would say it, you know. And so,
yeah, I'm not surprised that they would think that and actually be stupid enough to articulate it, because they don't see it as jacked up.
I can't. You know, that's one reason why I'm, I don't know what the word is, satisfied, you know, that they're showing the desperation so much, going so overboard, so that, you know, a lot of people are getting shocked awake,
hey,
you know, by this stuff.
The lizard overlords are coming, and they demand schedule compliance.
Yeah, 20 years and we're done with Afghanistan, yeah, McCain said.
There's something, like say, there's something. There is something coming down the pipeline. I don't know what it is, but
they're on schedule.
I'm going with lizard overlords, all right?
What else? I don't know what the...
Would you be surprised? If tomorrow the lizard overlord, they,
this morning we were talking and I go, yeah, it's a They Live thing. And Bob's like, They Live, what are you talking about? And he hasn't seen the movie They Live yet. And so we watched a little trailer and I showed some pictures. Oh, yeah, I've seen those memes. I go, well, that's what that's about, is that they put on the right sunglasses and you go, they're aliens. I mean, they're running the...
Well, it all started, it was, you know, everybody should go to Declare Your Independence, the Ernest Hancock, or a Freedom's Phoenix website, because I think you're going to put that video up there about how people will just sit in a room slowly filling with smoke, and if they're by themselves, they'll get up and run out at the first sign of the smoke. But if they're in there with a bunch of other people who don't get up and run out, they just, like, ignore the smoke...
They die.
They will sit in the room to the point that they will die. Because they don't want to be seen as not part of the crowd. It's crazy.
It was an experiment that they did. They put them in a hotel room, and they said they were there to fill out some social media, advertising, marketing, whatever the hell it was. And they had eight people. One of them didn't know what was going on. The other seven
were part of the scam.
Yeah, they just sit there, and the smoke coming under the door, and they got sounds in the background. They got cameras on everybody. And if you're by yourself, you go, what the hell? I'm getting out of here, and you leave. And the other one, seven people sit there and go, we're good. All of them just sat there until they were dead, you know. One guy, went, hey, let's go check that out. He went and looked at it, and everybody goes, well, they told us just to stay here and wait until they come back. And eventually he goes to the door, and he goes, okay, so he went back and sat down.
Yeah,
and
he was almost ready to walk out the door, and then somebody's like, well, they told us to wait here. And he was like, well, okay. And he walked back in there, and, they had the, fire department people were going, like, if this was a real fire, they'd all be dead.
And there was an example of this. It was a Woolworth in London or something. And the people that died were the ones that were in the restaurant. And they didn't want to just get up and leave because nobody left because they wanted to pay their check.
Yeah, they all felt bad that, well, we can't just get up and leave. We haven't paid yet. And they stayed there and died.
It is definitely psychology that I know that they know that they're playing on our good nature. They're playing on, they see our compassion and our empathy as a weakness, and they're using it against us. You don't want to kill grandma, do you? And I remember Greg Tivenin, a good friend of ours, he's a hardcore freaking anarchist of, bite me. And during the 90s, they went to him one time, and he ran for legislature in 94. We had like 30 candidates on. We were really kicking butt. And he got interviewed, and they go, well, why are you running? He goes, because Ernie made me.
He's one of your people.
I go, Greg, seriously, that's your Ernie answer? Goes, hey, man, I'm just honest, whatever. But it was all about the children. They go, oh, the children. Oh, it's about the children. The children, the children, the children. And this is what he says. He goes, first, kill all the children. And the point that he was making, he goes, in China, he goes, they're not even considered, freaking people until they're like 2 years old or something. He was like, another girl in the canal. I mean, that kind of thing. And I'm going, Greg, seriously, you gotta articulate this better, But the point he was making, he goes, you don't give them, what they're going to use against you. They're playing on your emotions, and he just will not, go for it. Now, of course, he has two girls that he loves and, raised, and they never saw the inside of a schoolroom. He homeschooled way before it was popular. He had home birth. He married an ex-wife that lives in Tucson, and his daughter from that, she's awesome. She's great. Matter of fact, I married her. I mean, I performed the ceremony, and she asked...
Does Donna know?
Yeah. And... And, that was awesome, and I was happy to do that. And I had to become a minister of the spaghetti monster of whatever hell it was. I got a certificate, something. But it was a nice ceremony, and it went well. And I've married two other couples since then, so I've married three people.
Matchbook minister.
Yeah, I'm just right. I'm a matchbook minister. But his wife, they get along fine, and his daughter, she's awesome. She's an architect. She went to University of Arizona as an architect now. And but he went pen pal. He just said, look, I'm looking for a certain kind of woman. I need somebody that appreciates what America has and that, you know, we're going to build our own life and off grid and kind of, you know, that kind of thing. So he went to the Philippines. And when you go looking for a wife, they don't let you go, man. No. You stopped here first. You ain't going to the next village, man. We decided you American. We got a daughter, and you're so it was Doreen.
Spent some time in the Philippines. I know exactly what you're talking about.
So it was. So he has like you know extended family in the Philippines that they you know help with different things, and so he's got that contact. But Doreen was awesome. You know she came and exactly what he wanted. Somebody that appreciated the freedoms that we have and the opportunities. She works hard. They have a farm in Missouri. I don't want to say where, but, you know, in the middle of nothing, which has no building codes, no permitting, whatever the heck. And they built a nice...
He's way back in a holler.
He's back in a holler. And it's a small community. And when I couldn't find their house, I go, you know, a friend of mine, I can't find it. You know, he has a Filipino wife. Oh, I know who you're talking about. You know, boom, it's right over there. So, and his children grew up. She did a lot of the, if you go on the top of Freedom's Phoenix, where it says newspapers and the e-zine, we have like, God, 36, 40 covers. And we did a lot of, you know, online magazines, that technology to be able to do that. And then, of course, the newspaper, Athena, his daughter, she now, I don't know, she was a cartoonist for a newspaper for a long time.
She's a graphic artist or something.
Yeah, she's a graphic artist, and she was just really talented.
Really
and I
good.
Said,
yeah,
you know, look, and we had, you know, Davi and Scott Beezer that did other covers, you know, they were regular graphic artists for me, and they helped her and moved her along, and Jeff DeFilippi, another graphic artist, you know, kind of, she was 18. And, you know, and we'd go back and forth. I mean, she did the art for The Precariat,
yeah.
You know, and so... She did a lot, and we go back and forth, and I'd pay her a couple $100 for a cover and stuff, which she'd probably worth more than that now, of course. But she was self-taught. And then her little sister, she was going to the University of Arizona. That was the first time she actually been into a classroom or something going to college. And she's, I think, a writer. She's doing writing. And his whole thing was he understood exactly what we know. He's a good friend. He knew where this was going. He was way ahead of us. He was one of the first anarchists I ever met. He's like, oh, no. And when we would go and speak at high schools, there would be, you know, like private schools, Brophy Prep and all these. They'd have us come in because, you know, we'd out being libertarians doing stuff. There would be some teacher go, well, come talk to my, you know, classroom about, because they, you know, tired of the Republicans and Democrats. They'd have us, you know, be Republican and Democrat, and the libertarians would come as county chairs, and we'd go in and, you know, do a presentation. Then the following years, they wouldn't even invite them anymore because they were just, you know,
boring
and freaking lying sacks of snot. And for years, we would go in September, and we would just do it, be like part of the history class or government class or whatever class, and we would go around the valley, different high schools and so on. And Greg was one of the priests. He did a thing on the Federal Reserve, and he was talking about anarchy. That was his thing, and you know, and throughout history and how the Vikings did different stuff in different communities. And yes, there has been
pirates.
Blah blah blah.
The pirates,
you know,
they were a fairly democratic anarchists kind of.
Freedom oriented. Well, you know what it was? The pirates were a lot of times they were freed, you know, or escaped slaves. They were people that they didn't like, you know, the system. They were shanghaied into service by the navies or didn't. You know, and what are they doing pirating? Well, it was some Spanish galleon that went and ripped it off from the Incas, you know, all the gold or something. And they go, well, you ripped it off of them, so we're ripping it off of you, you know. And then there was a series called Black Sails. So you ever see Black Sail?
Some of it. I didn't watch too much.
I watched it straight through. It was awesome.
I was I'm not going to get sucked into another TV series thing.
That's a good one. You know, the series Lost in Space on Netflix, which they got a new season on that.
Series. I knew there was a movie. I didn't realize they were doing it.
No, they did like a full season or two. It was awesome.
I don't do TV.
The head guy in that, you know, John Robinson, you know, the head guy, he was the pirate in the pirate series, you know, and he's a really good actor. Toby Mitch, something like that. I can't remember. But it was a good series. And, you know, Greg would... for these kids, they just loved it. That's why we always get invited back every year, you know, because it was just, man, they are not teaching this. This is not in the curriculum, you know. And, you know, things about the Federal Reserve and stuff. It was, and the teacher would learn a lot, too, you know. And it was interesting, you know, that we've had a big impact on the state. And I'm hoping to do that again. And all the stuff that we articulated and defined and made clear and stuff, it's all come to pass. And I know the impact it's had on the kids from my kids' friends. They went to a Christian school. It was called Phoenix Christian Junior Senior High. So it was like 7th to 12th grade. And while we were running for office and all that kind of stuff, you know, my kids' friends would be in and they'd come over. Well, Mr. Hancock, what do you think about whatever? And then I knew their parents because, you know, they're in football and, you know, and we had four kids in various sports of volleyball and softball and football and wrestling. I mean, you know, so, you know, their parents, cool people too. They'd send their kids there to get a real education just like we did. And, you know, they'd ask me questions too. Yeah, but you know what? In the parking lot, you'd see nothing but, you know, W. Bush bumper stickers everywhere and so on, you know. And of course, they're the libertarians with the pizza restaurant and, you know, but the kids would always ask me questions and it'd turn into a thing. We'd be in the living room and our house was like the house, you know, because, you know, my son's captain of the football team and, you know, and, you know, my son's playing football and, you know, the girls volleyball and softball and all that stuff. So we had football stars and smart kids and you know, cheerleaders and everything. Our walls are dripping with estrogen and testosterone for years. And I told Dom, we need to enjoy this because this isn't going to last forever, you know. And we had a lot of fun. Well, they would be over a lot and they would ask me questions and it'd turn into an hour, 2 hour thing.
Really? You
know? Yeah. And
ask Ernie a question? No.
So after when the Ron Paul Revolution started in 07, by that time they started graduating high school and they're and I go speak at Arizona State University or something, and I'd see several of them in the audience and I'm going, ah, there you are, you know. So they would put our signs and different stuff on their Facebooks. And they would, you know, be promoting our campaigns, whether they're friends. Yeah, I know him. And, you know, and they would be able to articulate this stuff. I wonder how that served them later in life, that they, you know, they go, yeah, I'm kind of on the outs,
that,
you know.
That little splinter of freedom that'll always be in there, they, irritating their brain.
I know. They got a splinter in their mind. And so my kids, and one thing, I remember when my two sons were working at Honeywell Aerospace there. They started when they're like 18, 19, and, you know, they'd work while they'd go to school and stuff, you know, college and stuff. And they would do graveyard shift. So they're galley slaves. They're in a heat treat of whatever the heck when they started there, and they just wound up staying. And we used to have these Ron Paul lunch bags. They were like white lunch bags, you know, like little bags that you'd get your lunch in or something. And we had a rubber stamp that said Ron Paul Revolution on, boom. And then we put bumper stickers and DVDs and just crap in it, you know. It was like a little party
swag
pack.
Bag.
Yeah, swag bag, you know, of stuff. And we'd make a bunch of them, hundreds of them, you know, and people would just use them, you know. It's just easier to, you know, here, you know, here's a video, here's a thing, you know, knock yourself out. After the 08 one, we did a bunch of them for the 12 campaign. And I'd have like hundreds, and all of a sudden the pile kept getting smaller of ones that I wasn't passing out. You know, I'm going, what happened? And then, you know, all of a sudden they'd be gone and stuff. And then when my son's coming, he goes, hey, you got any more of those bags left? He was taking them to work.
Right.
You know, I'm going, oh, see, man, you got to let me know, man. I'm out of stuff now. And so a lot of the guys at work, they would listen to the show. And it was, you know, the adult, and so my sons are like, oh God, you know, that's why they go, now we try not to encourage them, you know, because, you know, he just gets a little too uppity or whatever.
You need to ask him a question. No.
Well, there was one time, I tell this story on the show sometimes, that, they go, don't ask my dad a question, because then they'd lose it, because they'd be back in the computer room playing poker or doing search or hot or not or whatever the hell they were doing. And, one of them would come out and ask me, go, we see time, then another one, and all of a sudden my son's go, what the hell, everybody's in here, you know. So that, you know, they didn't dig that. But one time, it was after school, it was in the afternoon, and their friends were over. I've known a lot of their friends since they were little. I mean, you know, 7th grade to 12th. I mean, you know, for after a while, you know them. And we're still friends, a lot of them. You know, they'll call on different things. But come to different parties and or Christmas parties and stuff. We'd see them and stuff. Well, one time, I remember a couple of them were sitting on the couch, and they asked me a question. And within like 10 seconds, both of my sons sail over the coffee table, land on him, start punching him in the arm. I told you, never ask my dad a question. Wow, is it that bad, you know? So it's, but we're looking to have that kind of, and your sons, same thing. Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you're taking court with them and their friends, and they go off, and now they're replicating whatever you're telling them, you know. And so all your kids and mine, we're fine. But they understand they're in an atmosphere that's not certainly online or in the media or in polite, you know, society or girlfriends or friends. You know, they got a temper, you know, what they say, because, you know, they're not invited to the Christmas party or something, you know. And that's how a lot of people are. They, you know, truth hurts.
Yeah. Well, it starts to, it's that cognizant dissonance or whatever, and you got to try to purge that out of your brain. You go, you know, your whole life is built around a relief system, and then somebody goes, well, what about this? And it all just crumbles. You know, kind of thing.
You know,
and,
one of the things
it's hard for people to deal with.
That, you know, when I was doing radio and so on, and certainly when I was on Air America, and you got a liberal audience, and that's why I've had Dennis Kucinich on the show quite a bit, because he was the only one, because he was anti-war, so he was like, you know, buds with Ron Paul, and I just had him on not too long ago, a couple of months ago. That he's running for mayor in Cleveland again. That's where he started. You know, he's a city council in Cleveland as a young 20-something-year-old back in the day. He becomes a congressman, presidential candidate, and so on. But he's very progressive. But he was, you know, at least serious about whatever it was he was doing. But, you know, we don't agree on everything. But, I liked him. He's a nice enough guy. And but when I had him on recently, it didn't really go well, because he was definitely, you know, playing the game of I want to get elected as a Democrat thing. So, I mean, I'm kind of be nice to him, but I'm just, this isn't working. There has been so many people that would, you know, challenge my humanity. You know, well, you don't care. Yeah, I do. You know, care about what? What are you looking for? Well, what about the homeless, the this, that? And I'm going, they put a war on poverty to create more poverty, so they got more war on poverty to make more money of poverty or war of what. I mean, you know, it's a lie. And this cognitive dissonance is when you try to hold more than one philosophy in your head and they don't reconcile each other. That's cognitive dissonance. Right. And you have to abandon the BS based on what? So I would always do it this way. I go, imagine I put my hand on your shoulder and I got to ask you a question. Whose life is this? Well, of course, well, it's mine, you know. And some people, they see it coming, they go, well, it's God's. And I go, well, you're the steward of that life. He's blessed you with the, you know, life, and it's freaking, you know, you're the one signing the contracts. You're the one doing the time. I mean, you know, it's like you got to be responsible for yourself. And, they don't like that. They don't want to. The fact that they have responsibility for their own life and their own actions, and they go, well, I own it. I go, well, welcome to being a libertarian. Peace out. We're done, you know? Because any and everything that they would do to try and control somebody else means they don't own their life. You can't say you own yours and everybody else is your slave. I mean,
well, that's
how does
what
that
I was,
work?
You know, you took a little break and went in there while I was, you know, ranting on here. But, you know, that's.
I was listening.
That, you know. It is, the human spirit is free. It's just part of the how we're wired. And anybody who wants to, you know, socialism, communism, fascism, you know, that whoever wants to control you, it's viscerally against what your natural spirit is. And that's why it never works. As much as they can sit there on paper and lay out what the utopia would be of mm-hmm. socialism or communism, they have to destroy that individual, I own me spirit, because it can't exist with communism or socialism. It just doesn't work. The collective and the individual can never work. And so they have to, if they want to drive this, going to be a collective, they have to destroy what makes us human.
And that has always been my main concern.
I know. We've talked about it.
They have to change us, what makes us human. Either psychologically, they can get a lot, you can fool all the people some of the time and some of the people all the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time. So I'm going, okay, well, how do they try and get, as many people as possible as they can fool? They have to change us. And it's not just psychological. It's the human spirit. And I'm afraid that these vaccines, these shots, they change you at a genetic level, that they could actually change humanity to the point that you'll accept this. And, sometimes you can do it with just you're hungry, that always works, but then you got other things to deal with,
But that doesn't make you accept it. It makes you tolerate it. They have to get you to accept it, or they'll always be the Spartacus. They'll always be the one. They'll always be the Neo.
There's always Zion.
Yeah, they have to fundamentally change what makes you human for you to ever to accept being an ant or being a bee, being part of the colony, being for the group. Of course you want to work together when it's for your
social
mutual,
animals
for its mutual benefit. But that part of you that has to be extinguished for you to put the need of the hive before yourself just isn't in us. They have to destroy that individuality that we have. That's part of the way we're wired.
Which is what made America as a concept so powerful so fast.
Exactly, because you go back through history, there was very few examples of that where people were allowed to do that. And us breaking away from the monarchy, and how quickly they went, we may have thought we had broke away from the monarchy, but they've had their fingers.
Yeah, the Constitution.
They've had their fingers in this country trying to drag us back in since the beginning.
Constitution was Art Hamilton, whose wife's father was had some link into the Bank of England, that as soon as they got the Constitution, it's not worth a continental. They borrowed $350,000 back when it used to be real money, and they made all debts good, and that's why they were buying them pennies on the dollar, the Continental, that then they knew that it was going to be dollar for dollar and go into the debt and whatever, and they made bank by doing the Constitution and immediately got indebted to the Bank of England or London or whatever it was. And it was all part of a freaking scam, from the beginning. And Hamilton's argument was, well, if we don't have this collective tax and authority, if we can take and force money from you, how are we going to fund sustained wars? And I'm like, well, that's a good reason not to do it right there. You can't have these 20-year wars,
The original neocon.
It's been the same battle forever. And if you, any amount of history you read in the papers, that's why they got to demonize Thomas Jefferson all the hell, because the concept of him is the only purpose of government was the defense of individual, and that is not it. They are, the purpose of government is defense of the government. And that's what we're dealing with. So I don't, the audience, hopefully you can see that, the reason we do this is not, for any other reason other than self-preservation for us, our lifestyle, our livelihood, our family, our future of our grandkids. I understand how serious it is. We have fun. I mean, if you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong, But, make them make you. I like that. We're going to have some fun with that one. That's really what it's coming down to.
It's going to come down to.
Because a lot of people, they want to go, make them leave you alone, or make them, go get them, or take them out, or fight them, or whatever. No, I ain't got to fight them. I just got to make them make me. I'm just not cooperating. It's non-compliance. It's passive resistance. It's no make them make you. Because when they make you, then it's very obvious they're the
making
aggressor.
You.
Yeah, they're making you. And when are you justified in resistance is when they're making you. They got to make you take the shit. They got to make you go into the camp. They got to make you get on a cattle car. They got to make you. When is it time to resist? Before the cattle car door closes. You got to make them make you. And the resistance to them not making you is got to be justified to a candid world. I mean, that's why they did the Declaration. Look, this is why we're doing this. Let me give you a list of all the whys. Well, it's the same crap that they've been doing. You read the Declaration of Independence, all that crap applies to right now. It's the exact same thing going on. It's always going to be the same thing. So they have to change us fundamentally.
It's what the evil people do. It doesn't change.
Yeah, they do it with incantations, with chemicals, with drugs, with GMO foods, with whatever the hell they're going to do to
send forth to eat out your substance and
harass our people and eat out our substance, man, if that doesn't apply. So that's why in 94 when we did the Declaration of Independence for Arizona, it was Arizona's Declaration of Independence, and it was just the king was the federal government, and these colonies was Arizona, and it all applied. And they kind of got nervous about that. That was the one, of all the initiatives that we did, that was the one they didn't want to talk about. You know, of all the ones, they always yelled something about something. That one, they didn't want to talk. They didn't bring any attention to that one.
Yeah.
You know, and that was interesting because we've done a lot of initiatives. And it was all about what would we do? You know, if we were legislators, what would we do? This and this and this and this and this and this and this. And a lot of those became law. You know, they legislators, they go, ooh, that's popular. We do that one. I get some campaign donations for that, you know. And they would do it, you know. And we've had that kind of impact. But we're in a new phase now. But the solution's still the same. It's just general public opinion. So that's what we're working on. But I need to take care of. I don't want to be without power. I need electricity. For a bunch of stuff I want to do. If I just want to run freaking robot charge of go plow my fields of laser my weeds or whatever. I mean, you know, well, I'm going to need electrical power. And they know that. So it's going to come. Here, Mr. You know, nuclear power freaking refueling supervisor Bob, you know. Yeah, and they want you to go back. They keep bugging you to go back and work.
Maybe.
They need some help.
Maybe. We'll see.
Yeah, they offer you enough money.
The time gets right, and they offer me enough money. Don't harass me too much.
Don't make you take a vaccine.
Don't make me take a vaccine. I'll probably.
Well, that's one of the things they do. Have you asked them that? You know, do I got to take a vaccine?
Yes, I did.
And what do they say?
Not yet. That hasn't come down the pipeline yet.
So are you going to take a vaccine and get your bunch of money?
No. No, you know. No.
And I think I'll decline.
Yeah, let's see. I want to trade in my immune system for my 13 pieces of silver. I don't think so.
So this is, and that's one thing. You're a highly trained, certified, super duper. I always felt better that Bob was at the nuclear power plant. I go, oh, Bob's there. You know, I mean, he's actually hugging on the core, man. You know, I'm going, he's inside the containment thing. I'm going, I think I feel better that Bob's there. You know, and
I'm pretty good, man. I live within the 10-mile radius, and if I wasn't comfortable with it, I wouldn't be here. So
yeah, you had a short drive to work.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You know,
so it's been good us hanging out and talking about this and a lot of the stuff. So you can see the audience, we've lived this for a long time, you know, and that's why I'm the activist doing the kind of stuff that we do, because who else is doing it in this state?
No, maybe they're not going to make those guys take the vaccine. Pretty hard to replace them in 3 years.
Right. Now we
better approach this a little more with a little more caution,
because they make bank on making power there.
Oh yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's yeah, they do all right. You know, it's,
well, does Palo Verde, does it produce enough energy to supply the entire state?
No. But they don't own all three of the plants. Some of that power goes to California, and some of it goes over to tech. You know, this, it's a consortium of utilities that actually own the generation there. You know, I think last I checked, it was somewhere around 33% of one of those plants' output is basically for Arizona. The rest of it's all carved up in Central.
Well, I mean, if the three plants, if they screw you and we're taking all the power, I mean, could it supply the state?
I don't know. It'd be interesting. It'd be close. I mean, this time of day, it's 107 out, and middle of the summertime.
Arizona's got a nuclear power plant.
They probably supply a lot of it, but probably not all of it. But you know, it's getting to be an issue. I mean, Colorado River's mighty low. They're talking about actually having to stop generation at Lake Mead because the level's getting so low. They can't run the turbines.
Hoover Dam.
Yeah. You know, and I imagine Lake Powell isn't much better. It's further upstream, so the water probably is going through. That has to go through there first before it gets down to Lake Mead, but. Powell is probably not much better. I mean, I'm sure
there's been a lot of rain, though. I mean, it seems like what's going on is California is just sucking it and having it go to the ocean. What are they doing?
Well, they get their, I was just reading an article not too long ago about it, and the vast majority of the water that comes down the Colorado is the winter snowpack in the Rockies, and they've just had crappy winters. They just haven't had a lot of moisture. I mean, they had one a couple of years ago where they went like, whoa, we got a whole bunch of, and then it didn't. But if you go back, it's global warming. Mm-hmm. But if you go back and, do way more than a couple hundred years that we think we know what's going on, you go back, thousands of years, there's a time in not too distant past, within recorded, U.S. history, that they've had what they call this atmospheric river. And I mean, literally, it just dumped water, across the Pacific into the Rocky Mountains. And like California, the whole inner basin was, underwater. And so, I mean, they can get a lot of water in a really short period of time. It just, it comes and goes.
Here in Arizona, I've been here since the...
carved the Grand Canyon, and it wasn't dried up river.
Right.
And took a long time, but this water comes down that river.
I don't know. They think it might have just been done in a few weeks with a big, giant bust loose of the glacier or whatever the hell, But the I've been here since 72, and I've been around the country and so on, I was a young man and so on. But, Arizona gets all its lakes filled about every 7 years. 70, I don't know what the last time was, but the politicians, they'll freak about, oh my God, we're going to die, and then it rains, and they shut up for about 2 or 3 years, and then they start it all over again. And it's been cycles, and there has been a lot of monsoon rain, this summer.
Yeah, they got a hurricane, that's tropical storm or whatever coming. I mean, it's you look at the track, and it's coming right up the Gulf of Baja. And Gulf of California, I guess, whether it's going to, I mean, we're seeing moisture in the air right now, and I think that's some of the outer bands of that, but sometime midweek, it's going to fall apart on the, into Coast. Mexico, but a lot of the moisture from the tropical depression is going to come up here, so.
Yeah, it's been, I've been here a lot. They scream this all the time, was it 40, 50 years I've been here? And it's constantly, they're screaming about, in the drought and everything, but we got 40 years of water underground. We are not, hurting here in the state. They're talking about the Colorado, which is not...
A lot of that's agriculture.
Yeah, that's, a lot of the agriculture for Southern California, like Las Vegas and stuff. But Arizona, because our governor, Bruce Babbitt, which was Secretary of Interior during the Clinton administration, and his family history, he's they, them, those. I mean, of course, you don't get in the Clinton administration without being they, them, those. But they, that's where the Central Arizona Project came from, the CAP. And Central Arizona Project is a canal system. It goes from the Colorado all the way down to Tucson. We get our water out of it, but they're going, yeah, I think Arizona, you may not need it that much anymore.
There's going to be some cuts coming this year. I was just reading an article about it. So there's going to be some significant cuts because the river just hasn't got the water in it.
And, that's one thing that we've been studying a lot for the past couple of years is rain harvesting. That's a thing. Like here on your property, it rains. There's a freaking flood come through here. I need to catch that water somehow, man. So we'll keep you guys informed on what we're doing. We just wanted to, just yak it, and Bob and I were going to talk about this stuff. Might as well share it with y'all. But one less, radio show I got to do. But the, you can see our knowledge, you can see our motivation, you can see our understanding, and you can see that we know that we see, and that we got to do something, or we're just going to get overrun. And if you as an individual, I don't think I'm going to save your ass. There's nothing we're going to. You can sit back. Oh, Ernie and Bob's got covered. And the friends, Ernie and his people, kind of crap. Yeah. And I'm going, no, there is no people. It's you.
We're mine canaries. We're telling you bad things are coming, but we can't save you. You got to do it yourself.
And I just want to you understand our motivation, and when things happen and they come after me or us or whatever, it's for this. It's not anything. We don't advocate anything. I'm not even resist them. Screw them. I'm not going to try and take over. Well, I don't care.
You're just going to make them make us do it.
Yeah.
Make them.
Yeah. You're still voting. Yeah. That's right. You're going to make them make us. But we got to be ready to where it's really hard for them to make us when you got your own power and your own water and your own food and you're ready for it. You know, how are they going to make you? They got to come make you.
Yeah. They want to take you to the cattle car and make them drag you the whole way.
Yeah. I'm you know, that's one thing. They were going, you know, how dignified are you going to be as you go to the gallows? I'm going to be a freaking dick. You're going to have to kill me to kill me. I mean, you know, I'm not going to make it easy on you, you know? Well, that's enough. You know, peace, guys. You know, to take care of you.